United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record reflect that all five board members are present, so we do have a quorum. Council, is there a report from closed session?
No, President Sanders. There are no reports from the last closed session.
Okay, thank you. This is the time for a public comment for matters that are not on the agenda and are within the jurisdiction of the Cambria Community Services District. I have one request to speak under the first public comment period from Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders, Board.
Good afternoon.
It has been 8 years and one day since this board declared a moratorium on new connections. That's 2,923 days. Since then, the district has done a lot of things to help improve the situation for fire safety and for public health in terms of the water reliability. You've developed and approved a water master plan. You've had a change of three board members. You've implemented a retrofit program. You've increased storage capacity for fire by at least 700,000 gallons. You've increased the water pressure 250% to provide adequate flow for firefighting. You've reduced the number of potential connections with the purchase of the Fiscalini Branch Preserve and promotion of lot mergers. You've installed new electronic meters and reduced water loss from 12% to about 8%. And new standards of efficiency have reduced the demand without changing anybody's habits of water use. We have a wonderful town here, and we could find ourselves in the expensive and awkward position of defending policies that are outdated, inconsistent, or without firm footing. Once again, I formally ask this board review and reconsider the need for the appropriateness of the Water Code Section 350 emergency declaration at a public hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. The next request to speak is from Tina Dickerson.
Thank you, Tina Dickerson, Cambria. I haven't been able to attend the last two or three meetings, but I have certainly watched them on TV. And there are three very brief items I'd like to bring to your attention. One, while Director Clift gave a wonderful, make wonderful comments regarding Pine Dorado and how successful it was, a number of retailers in the area, and including myself, because I happen to work at some of the stores in town, were very concerned that Cambria Road was closed off during that event for a car show. And if we are so concerned in this town, as we well should be, regarding safety, emergency vehicles being able to get through, ambulances, fire, why on earth would the main artery, one of the three main arteries to Highway 1 and the shortest one possible with four lanes, be closed off for a car show? I take issue with that, and I would hope, and I know I've heard from many people in town that were very upset about that. So I would ask that you consider that for next year's Pine Dorado, that it not be closed off. Second thing, I've been noticing on Moonstone, when I walk on Moonstone, the boardwalk, that there are a lot of people with dogs on the beach on Moonstone Beach, either with leashes, sometimes without leashes. I've seen dog defecation on the beach. While we have these beautiful signs that are in educating those of us who live here and especially visitors to the kind of wildlife that we have in our coastal community, we certainly cannot, we can hardly find a sign that says no dogs on the beach. And if you do find them, they're about that big, they're very old, they're rusted, they're hidden by foliage. I walked yesterday and purposefully looked for signs. We're on access areas to the beach. It's becoming a real problem. Not to mention little kids on the beach where dogs that are not on leashes are coming up to them. So I bring that to your attention. And the third thing is I know that the state passed a law regarding cell phone use to where we all know that we're not supposed to be using cell phones in our car while driving. I have witnessed three CCSD employees in CCSD trucks using cell phones, and I would like to bring that to the board and the manager's attention because I don't understand. I don't think that they are excused from the state law.
Community this size. And there are others who I'm sure have noise issues who haven't contacted me yet. My phone number and unfortunately, my email is incorrect in the newspaper, so there will be a correction of that this week. And I hope anybody who has a noise issue, whether it's barking dogs, construction, no mufflers on vehicles, whatever the source of the noise, I hope they will contact me and let me know. And we plan on having some meetings in the near future. And I will chronicle all this information and present it to the NCAC at the appropriate time. We do have noise issues which have to be addressed because it's only going to get worse, and if we don't do it now, then it'll be twice as hard later on. So I hope we have the cooperation of the community and the Land Use Committee and the NCAC. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no more requests to speak for the first public comment period, so we will close the public comment period and move on to agenda item number 3. Are there any additions, deletions, or consent calendar items to be pulled? Apparently not. The agenda will stand as published. I'm sorry, Director Clift.
Other than maybe moving the...
Yes, we will do that. We're going to take items 4 and 5 a little bit out of order here so we don't tie up our sheriff's commander. We'd like to have him come up first and give his report. Otherwise, you may be cooling your heels for quite a while. You bet. Yeah. Commander Hall, can you turn the mic on? There you go.
You could hear me.
Yeah, I'm sure we could.
My name is Ben Hall. I'm commander of the Sheriff Coastal Patrol Division. We handle sheriff patrol from Avila up to Monterey County line. The last month in Cambria, we had 32 reports and 186 calls for service. Last year, we had 54 reports and 239 calls for service, so we're down quite a bit from the previous year. Of any significance in the last month, we had a number of vehicle thefts from unlocked vehicles, a few of them up on 5,000 block of Plymouth, one up on Cambria Pines Drive, and one in downtown area. We also had a stabbing. A homeless gentleman had some superficial stab wounds. Someone stabbed him when he was sleeping at night. Then we had we did do some proactive work. We did a couple of searches of probationer and parole houses and made about 6 arrests in that case for some drugs and probation and parole violations. Now, also this right now we're kind of recruiting for our Sheriff Auxiliary Volunteer Patrol, our SAVP. You may have seen them around Cambria. They're driving the black and white that says Volunteer Patrol. Let's see what I have on that. If someone's accepted on this program, we give them some training. They'll go through 5 weeks, 5 Saturdays of an academy, teach them things such as observation skills, radio procedures, and first aid. What they do is they provide supplement patrol in your communities. They kind of like the eyes and ears, and they report back to the deputies if they think something needs to be addressed. Basically, they're kind of our link between the public and law enforcement. We have an academy scheduled for April 10th. That'll be for 5 Saturdays, but we need people, anyone that's interested, to put in their application right away. We're actually doing interviews in January. So if you know anybody that may be interested in assisting the community in that way, please give the Sheriff's Department a call. Any questions?
Any questions of Commander Hall?
Yes, I have one, please. Commander, I'm told there's difficulty in accessing the sheriff's log, the incident log in this part of the world. I was told I had to go to Los Osos to find it. I'm sure that's not true, but can you give us an idea of how the public can access the log?
I think that is the only way. I don't think we have an automated log access at this time. You can come to Los Osos, or you can go to our headquarters, which is not that much further down the street at Kansas Avenue, to access our log.
So it's not available online, for example?
No, I don't think so.
Thank you.
We are online? Not the log. Okay. Kathy would know for sure.
Any other questions? Thank you, Commander.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Next, we'll move to a presentation by CAL FIRE, which is the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, on emergency medical service.
Our chief with CAL FIRE, County Fire.
Welcome.
Thank you. As Chief Miller stated, we were asked to meet with a subcommittee a couple months ago and just give a presentation as to who we were and how our contractual arrangements work. Our understanding is the community is kind of evaluating all of their options and sort of doing your due diligence on what might be available. And we were asked to show again today and go through essentially the same presentation. So I'll go ahead with that. Bear with me. I'm going to learn how to do this left-handed. The presentation is really in two parts. One is just a little about who we are as CAL FIRE and the County Fire Department, and then a little bit about how our contracts work. And we have a number of contractual relationships in the county. So if there are any questions, or shall I just proceed?
Please proceed, and okay. We'll reserve the questions until after your presentation.
Okay. Well, as you can see, we have in this county 79 years, almost 80 years, a contractual arrangement cooperative fire service with the county as the County Fire Department. I'll go through this pretty quickly, but we as CAL FIRE and County Fire, you can see our mission statement, our vision, and our core values there. I won't read those to you, but similar to many, many fire departments. We do combine structural wildland fire protection, emergency medical service, technical rescue, hazardous materials, emergency dispatching, pre-fire engineering, fire prevention, hazard reduction, all of those things you would typically expect of any fire department. In this county, we operate out of 21 stations. We have an air attack base where we run two air tankers and an air attack ship. We have a training center. Two fire crew camps. Actually, one of those camps in this county is we're trying to reopen. It had wards in it when the boys' school closed in Paso. It closed. We're getting ready to reopen it. We have another camp down in Ventura. And you can see the numbers of personnel, a little over 850 folks working for us in the various programs. I have a very diverse mission, as you can see. We, as far as emergency operations, we have battalion chiefs assigned into our operational battalions. This county is divided into five field battalions. There's battalion chiefs on duty 24/7. There's always a duty chief at the division chief level or higher available 24/7. We have obviously a lot of folks trained as incident commanders for large-scale incidents. Rob Lewin, who's with me, is an incident commander for one of the statewide incident command teams. Actually, two of the incident commanders work in this unit for the five southern teams. And obviously professional folks to staff all of that. In fire protection, all of the venues, structural, wildland, vehicle, airport. We do the crash fire rescue at the San Luis Obispo Airport as one of our assignments. As far as EMS, currently we're under agreement to provide paramedic services on four different companies, four different engines. We do that by contract. Folks can choose the level of service they want, and then we provide that. We do have full-time paramedic coordinator, field training officer. EMT-1 is the lowest level we'll accept in local government contracts. And then we run a lifeguard program in Pismo Beach as well. And vehicle accidents, unfortunately, kind of the bread and butter for all fire service. Of course, we do that. We do have a technical rescue team. This team is highly trained and well-equipped, and we do invite members of other departments to participate in that as well. Confined space rescue, trench rescue, swift water rescue, surf cliff, and urban search and rescue. They're well-outfitted and well-trained to perform those operations. Water and high-angle rescue, we have, of course, a very large coastline. Just like we have NCOR up in this area, we also run rescue boats, and we are very busy with the tourists in the ocean and on the cliffs. Keeps us all busy, as you're aware, in this area. Hazardous materials emergencies, of course, we're a large player in the hazardous materials team the county has. And then our air attack program, and as we said, we run two air tankers and an air attack ship out of our at the airport at Paso Robles. And then all of the typical venues you expect in administration as far as policy and program management, budgeting, accounting, coordination with other departments, mutual aid coordination, we're the op area coordinator for cost recovery, and then master planning. Public education, all of the programs I think you would typically expect of a fire department, all of our, and of course Smokey the Bear is in there too, because we like smoking, we like bears. And then we do our programs for the seniors and RVs and resorts for our tourists. And
could you tell us what Edith is?
Pardon?
Could you tell us what Edith is?
Oh, exit drills in the home. Yeah, it's one of the educational tools that we use in the schools. Very common. Many of the fire departments use it, teach the kids how to make egress from their homes, and that, you know, actually even things that breaking a window is okay if the house is on fire, if that's a way to get out. And then we have a volunteer and prevention program, and these folks come, they volunteer their time to help us with school programs and at the state fair and do some of the inspections. Emergency Communications Center, actually currently Cambria contracts with CAL FIRE, actually contracts directly with the county, pass through to the CAL FIRE four-year dispatching. We do run a 24-hour emergency command center. We are the county mutual aid coordinator, and then you can see all of the agencies that we currently dispatch for. We run on a command and control methodology. We have a battalion chief in charge of the command center, four fire captains, six comm operators, and paid call. There is always somebody at least at the fire captain level on the floor 24/7. So there is an individual with fire training that can make command and control decisions, act as the incident commander until the first unit arrives, make critical decisions about resource orders. We have expanded dispatch capability so that in a large incident, we can move that incident off the floor, not to interrupt the day-to-day dispatch, and handle it as a separate incident. We have access to statewide dispatch teams. Should we get significant activity, we can bring in trained teams just to deal with that. While the facility our dispatch is housed in is, we like to call it camouflage. It's not much to look at on the outside. It's very modern on the inside, and we recently had fairly significant investment in upgrading our consoles and our CAD-to-CAD process and our radio equipment. Okay, and we do have access to full-time radio techs, IT, both county and state. We also provide automotive services. We have two automotive repair shops where we do fleet maintenance for our fire apparatus, any of our emergency equipment. We have 24-hour repair service, mechanics on duty and on call at all times. And then we have a GIS lab, graphic information systems. We have a pre-fire engineer and a full-time GIS tech that works for us. Plus, we take good advantage of good GIS interns from Cal Poly as well. They help us with our computer-aided dispatch, which is all map-driven, emergency pre-plans, response maps, data analysis, and actually this is one they're working on in Cambria right now. Okay, and then just a little bit of a shameless promotion. Cal Fire did a little trailer for a movie that's coming up and about Cal Fire, but we thought it's very short. We thought we'd show it because all the clips in here of the cliff rescue, ocean surf rescue, and airport is all from this county. I'm going to ask for a little assistance back there to play the video for me. Oop. Nope. There we go. Ended up coming to Cal Fire back in 96 and found a way to get back to the Central Coast, and of course very, very glad I did. So I know a little bit about CSDs. I worked for one for 19 years. So. Anyway, I'll move on and we'll talk about our contracts. Here's locally. We have contracts with the County of San Luis Obispo, as we said, 79 years. City of Pismo Beach, Avila Beach CSD, Los Osos CSD, and then Cayucas has a modified contract called an Amador contract. They're still there and run their fire department year-round, but they contract with us to keep a state station open during the wintertime to assist them. So we contract as Cal Fire all over the state. There's 145 local government agencies, 35 of the 58 counties, and it really doesn't even represent all of the contracts because many agencies will subcontract through a county. In fact, in this county, that's the case with Los Osos and Avila. They actually contract directly with San Luis Obispo County, and that's passed through their contract with Cal Fire. It's a good solution for a lot of communities. Not obviously the answer for everybody, but it is cost-effective, efficient. Locally, you set the level of service. You determine that level of service based on the need and the risk, community desire, and of course, you do that based on budget as well. We develop a level of service document. And that goes through the budget approval process. And contracts are administered locally. Even though you may have a contract with the state, they're actually administered locally by the unit chief. That's me. That's the Cal Fire term for fire chief. So you get to work with local people. You don't have to call somebody you don't know in Sacramento when you have an issue. Can I get this to change? I think I went too far. There we go. Okay, so why contract for service? Here's some of the pros and cons. It is a very commonly used method. You do still get to maintain local control identity and manage your costs. You still have 5 votes on your level of service and the budget authority rather than I know this is something that my agency went through. They talked about, they looked at annexations and consolidations, and they were concerned about still having a 5-person vote over their level of service and the commitment to the community. You still maintain that in a contract. You clearly get to set the level of service and what you spend for it. It reduces administrative complexity and labor issues. All of the employees are actually state employees, with the exception of your reserve program. Your reserve program, those individuals, they're volunteering to your community and work for your community, would get any kind of reimbursement from the community, although we would manage the program and we would work with them to keep their program going. You get a greater depth of resource. Obviously, we have a tremendous number of folks working for us. They have a lot of experience, and you can draw on that experience. We can, when you have issues, we can bring folks in to help you with those and support your fire department. There is a greater opportunity to enhance the levels of service through sharing of resources. Again, this is one of the things that has made contracts available to some communities, just being able to lean on us to borrow crews or equipment or expertise or staff, administrative staff, to get through things. Now, the cons, a couple of them here, is that CAL FIRE sets the salary and benefit rates. You have no say in that any longer because these are state employees and they're governed by a statewide MOU. So that is negotiated on a statewide basis, and those salaries and benefits are set. Now, the good thing is you don't have to negotiate. The con is that you don't get to set those rates either, and that drives your cost. Whatever those costs are will affect the contract based on the number of employees you choose to have. And then from the employee's perspective, longer work weeks are field folks work a 72-hour work week. They work 3 days straight and then take 4 days off. And there are some other varieties of schedules that can be done. But your folks here, I think, work a 56-hour work week. There's no way around it. That's part of the MOU. Our folks work 72 hours. Now, they're compensated for that. They actually get FLSA, Fair Labor Standards Act, only allows 53 hours a week for a firefighter. You have to pay time and a half for anything beyond that. So our folks get 19 hours of time and a half. But that does actually count towards their retirement. It's PERSable, per se. But it's one of the timed so that you don't actually get your first bill until the end of the calendar year to kind of time it with tax revenues.
Chief, you say you never go over the contract. If you're under the contract, is that money refunded?
Yeah, actually, we just never bill you for it.
Okay.
So we bill you for actual costs. And so if actual costs come in under the agreed amount, you're only billed for the actual cost, and you never actually have to pay that difference. We don't have to refund it. You just never pay it. Okay, let's see. Again, I told you the contracts and budgets are locally controlled. You deal with folks right here. You don't have to deal remotely with people to get issues resolved. We do, as a large agency, we have access to good contracts for service and goods. And we charge our actual costs, but we do charge an admin fee. Currently, that admin fee is 11%. And that I've got another slide there and explains a little bit what that pays for. Oh, there it is. Okay. So admin fee is 11%. That covers administration, business services, information services, our human resources, training, legal, law enforcement, code development, fleet management. We're under Public Resources Code 4142 and 4144 is what enables us to enter into cooperative agreements with local government. But under that also, I'm not allowed to subsidize local government with state dollars, and it's not supposed to be the other way either. I represent a lot of local government agencies, and I know how we feel right now about our budget crisis. But it doesn't enter into this. You pay exactly for what the services you ask for. You get billed for exactly what they cost, but there is an 11% administrative fee. Okay, contract options. There are a number of options there. A comprehensive emergency services agreement is a full cooperative service agreement, and that's what we have with the county, Pismo Beach, Avila Beach, and Los Osos. Amador agreement, which is sort of a misnomer, but the agreement, these agreements were first developed in Amador County, so it kept that name, is an agreement that allows us to keep a state station that might normally close in the winter period, keep it open for the service of local government in the winter period. And we do that actually in three stations for the county, one station for Pismo Beach and one station for Cayucas. And since we already have folks assigned to the station, our seasonal help at that station leaves, that community can contract with us to hire a second person. We won't do it with less than two people on the engine. They hire a second person, pay any overtime costs and operating costs to keep that station open for 6 months of the year when it might normally be closed. It's a pretty cost-effective way of bolstering fire protection a little bit in specific areas, kind of designed for rural areas that would otherwise might be without fire protection or limited fire protection. There are a couple options. Typically, you can contract directly with CAL FIRE. There is the potential to contract with through County of San Luis Obispo, as they did in Los Osos and Avila. Of course, that takes county concurrence and talks amongst the county and the community. And then there's always possibility of cooperation with additional agencies. If you're involved with other agencies or you see another opportunity to have talks about whether we can better serve folks working cooperatively and including them in an agreement. Okay, as far as the process, essentially, this is sort of a generic overview of how the process can work, where you have a committee that analyzes your options and makes a recommendation to the board. The board would typically authorize a public workshop to get input from the residents and hear everybody's opinions and get more questions asked. If the input is positive and the board wants to go further, then you would be looking at adopting a resolution of intent to contract. It's a lot of work to put together a full proposal. It takes a lot of time on your part and our part, and so you really don't want to get there unless you're really serious and you have buy-in from all groups, and you need buy-in from labor, from the CSD, and from your community that you're heading in the right direction. One of the things that has to be done is develop a level of service document, and I'll show you a sample here. This is just a little excerpt from one in Los Osos. You can see contract with us. Their full-time employees become state employees. They would no longer be Cambria CSD employees. They transition to state service essentially without benefit of civil service exam and has to go before the state personnel board. And we have to put a comprehensive package together that outlines their education and experience. We run it through our training folks. We typically folks just transition rank for rank. It's usually pretty simple to do. You have an excellent fire department. I wouldn't expect there to be any issues there. But you have to work together with the employees and the CSD to make that happen. And then the CSD would be required to develop a transitional MOU with your firefighters. And this is an agreement between the CSD and the firefighters that dictates the conditions under which they would transition to state service. Typical things that have to be addressed, some of them are very simple in the fact that when you become a state employee, there's a one-month lag before you start getting your health benefits. One thing that would be asked in a transitional MOU is that you would continue their medical benefits for that 1 month before their state benefits kicked in. Other things might be as far as uniforms or how leave credits are paid off. Most leave credits, sick leave, vacation, holidays, they can all be transitioned to the state. The state will take that responsibility as long as those balances aren't higher than that, what they could have earned had they been state employees for that length of time. when a CSD employee becomes a state employee, they are fully tenured. If they have 5 years experience or they've worked for your CSD for 5 years, the day they start with the state, they are a state employee with 5 years of seniority, and they take all those across. But if they had, say they have comp time or something like that, you might have to negotiate buying that out. And one thing we ask to see in those agreements is some sort of clause, a right of return clause. Should the CSD choose to cancel their agreement, which you have the right to do with 12 months' notice at any time, we usually, like in these transitional MOUs, like to see an option that allows those employees, gives them first right of return back to their original fire department, to come back to their community. A lot of folks, you know, they do this because they love the fire service, but they also love their community, and they don't want to leave their community. It would be the employee's option, but we like to see that. It also prevents us from ending up in the middle of labor negotiations or where a community might say, hey, that's a good idea, let's contract with Cal Fire, and all those guys will be state employees, and then we'll cancel the contract and hire a whole new bunch. We won't go there. Okay. So that's why we ask for a clause like that. Okay. And then if we mutually agree that a cooperative agreement is the benefit of the state, the CSD, the general area, then in the best public interest, then we can agree to sign and enter into a cooperative agreement. Okay, emergency dispatch. I can breeze through this because it would be no change, actually. You already receive your dispatch from Cal Fire, from our Emergency Command Center in San Luis. It would continue in the same manner. Okay, a little more about transition of employees. This is a big deal. This is a big deal for those employees. It's an unknown, it's a change of employer. But I talked a little bit about this, but again, all your career employees will be offered full-time jobs with Cal Fire with full tenure. Any non-safety employees would have the option of either becoming state employees or remaining CSD employees. It's mandatory for our safety employees. It's not mandatory for non-safety. It can work either way, whichever works best for the CSD or for the employee. Their salaries are protected. We won't enter an agreement where anybody's salary goes down. They have to come across earning at least what they're earning at the day they come over. They can go up, but they can't go down. We won't cut anybody's salaries that comes across. And we don't lay people off for a contract. The CSD, if you agree to a contract at a certain staffing level, we would expect you would have that staffing when you come across. Or if you as an increase, then we can hire additional folks to do that. But we wouldn't be party to any kind of a leg, and we provide the employee development and training. And we do that through our local training and our statewide academies. This is important for folks to know. Employees, we do allow the employees of a community that contracts with us to remain in the community. I think that's real important, especially in that initial transition, because what we want them to do, we would require folks to rotate out maybe a couple at a time to go work at some other Cal Fire stations to get to learn the organization, the new organization they're working for, better. But we also want current Cal Fire County Fire employees to work here to increase the depth of knowledge of folks that really know this community. That provides greater depth for you. It's good for the employees. But when all of that is said and done, if all of those employees wish to remain in this community, we will allow them to remain in the community. They have certainly the option to look at other opportunities in the future, but we don't force them out. Obviously, there's excellent training opportunities and promotional opportunities that come with a large organization. They do have the ability to voluntarily accept new assignments locally or to ask for to relocate anywhere in the state. Those options are available to them. I'll emphasize, we don't displace folks. We don't bring them in and send them to the far reaches. They get to stay in their own town if they wish to do that, but they have other options available to them. There's a wide variety of assignments available for employees of CAL FIRE. Obviously, and you can see municipal engines, wildland, airport, crash fire rescue, hand crew, air attack, training, prevention, emergency command center, law enforcement, the like. You know, if they want to fly an aircraft every day, they can do that. Or if they would, you know, they prefer working in an emergency command center or ECC as opposed to working on an engine, there's all those options. Or if they want to be a cop, they can get into our law enforcement program. Okay, local control, big issue, real big issue when you're talking about contracts. And again, I'll emphasize this, CSD determines the level of service. You design it to meet your community need. It must meet our minimum safety standards, and in that, I mean, the basic one is that we will not operate with less than two people on an engine. We used to have contracts years ago that only had one. We used to say we would do it with one because we couldn't do it with less. Now for safety reasons, we will not operate with less than two people on an engine. Actually, on state engine, we're required to have a minimum of three, and actually for the last 3 years have been staffed at four by a governor's executive order. But on our local government engines, we will allow two-person staffing as the minimum safety. And that can be augmented with reserves as well. Los Osos does that, and so does Pismo Beach, where they have three paid staff on in Los Osos, and then they augment with a reserve that works 24/7. And they do that so they can run a split company, run two pieces of equipment, and split for multiple or back-to-back calls. Your CSD, you determine the budget. Obviously, the level of service determines the cost. Our costs are easy to figure. We know the employee costs. It's basically a labor contract. It's a contract. You hire CAL FIRE to manage and staff your fire department. It's still your fire department. So level of service really determines the cost. And then paying directly for some service and supplies reduces administrative fee. This is important. What we recommend in the agreements is that if you already have a purchasing methodology, you're already established as you are, our other contracts, that a lot of the day-to-day expenses you have, paying your utility bills, buying hose and all of that, that we will, as your fire department, do that, but you do it through your normal payment process, because that way it's not in your contract and you're not paying an administrative fee on it. No point in paying 11% on something you don't need to pay it on. And that's how we run our contracts with the county and the city and the others here. And it works very well and helps keep the cost down. You retain ownership of your capital assets. The buildings, apparatus, all the equipment remains property of the CSD. And that's important because it is still your fire department. You're still the governing body of that fire department. Again, we're providing the staffing and management for you. It maintains your independence. It allows you to regain your fire department should you not be pleased with a might be able to be done much quicker than that. It just would depend on circumstance. Okay. Local control and knowledge of the community. We encourage our cooperators to retain their identity and still be identified with their community. Typically, we use something like that as a mock-up of where you show your own community and your connection with CAL FIRE, your partnership. That's how our other contracts work. Your reserve program, we talked about, it's a pretty vital part of what you do here, and we would highly recommend that you maintain that reserve program and having them continue to serve their community. And then obviously, preservation of local knowledge, you know, contrary to some folks' belief, they don't bus us in from Sacramento every day. We're all local residents and have been. Many of our folks have spent their whole careers here. We have folks that like to move around and have worked in different parts of the state or in different programs. We have other folks that, you might probably know Phil Heenan up here at Cambry. He's worked a good portion of his career in Cambry because he loves it here, and we allow folks to do that. It's a good thing. Our folks have worked with Cambria Fire Department for years and worked side by side. And, of course, all of your employees would be allowed to stay in the community. But you get to increase the depth of knowledge by getting additional folks in here to learn your community. Okay, that was it. Sort of a quick overview of who we are and how our agreements work. So I can answer any questions if you choose.
Chief, thank you for the presentation. That was excellent, and it certainly answered most of my questions. We have a couple of requests to speak. Actually, I think questions from the audience, but before we get to that, I'm going to ask the board members if they have any questions. Director McKinnon.
Yes, Chief. You mentioned Los Osos.
Yes.
Was it correct? 1% increase in 5 years?
Yes.
The full complement of services with the typical?
Yeah, they have an arrangement. Our contract went up 1 year and went back down again, and they have a flat rate contract. They agree to a flat rate, and we keep it right at that, and we've been able to maintain their cost. And a lot of that's through attrition. Some senior employees have left. We've replaced them. You know, as they retired, we were able to replace them with employees with less tenure that maybe didn't get a longevity incentive. They had some employees that were red circled that had higher salaries than our standard salaries that retired. That changed. And our rates, actually our costs of doing business, really haven't gone up in the last few years. It's been pretty flat. Our administrative rate fluctuates back and forth. It's been down as low as, I think, 9%. I've been with Cal Fire for about 12 years, I guess, since almost 13 years. But the highest I've ever seen the rate was 11.13%. Currently it's at 11. So sometimes the administrative rate makes a difference, too, as to total cost.
Final question. You have two facilities in Cambria.
Alan, your mic. There you go.
We have two facilities in Cambria. Hypothetically, would you use both? Would you use one?
Are you referring to the Cal Fire station?
Cal Fire
and the
and Burton,
CSD station?
CSD.
Yeah. Well, no, obviously that would have to be discussed. I mean, if the community were to turn out to be interested in exploring this option further, those are things we could talk about. How could we be more effective and what would be the most cost-effective solution for the entire area? I mean, those are things that come out of these discussions.
Okay,
so.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Okay.
Director D'Amico.
Yeah, appreciate the discussion on transitioning. I think you pointed out some very good issues there and your capability of bringing the any existing staff who want to transition into the organization. A very pertinent question. I want to ask you, in other words, you're under the state retirement systems.
Correct.
Just your fire... Your portion of that pension fund, does your fire people pay any portion of that fund?
Yes, they do.
Do you remember what percentage it was?
I'm thinking, is it 8?
Some
maybe 8 or...
Yeah, I think that's the emergency.
Yeah, they do.
And then the other one is you have they have state health care benefits, I guess.
Correct.
Is there a deductible with that?
Well, it depends on what plan you choose. There's a whole host of plans.
So it's the relative... employee cost as to which deductible plans they choose.
Right, they have to pick a plan.
Right,
they pay a portion of their health care as well, and they can choose a plan.
Now, the contracts, you say it's 1 year potential, let's say 12 months.
They call them the schedules, but the schedules determine part of what you saw, the level of service document and your personnel cost. All of those schedules are reviewed annually with this board and adjusted annually. If there's an increase in cost on our part because our labor costs have gone up or or administrative fee has gone up, then the contract has to be adjusted. Or if you want to change the level of service, those are reviewed annually. No matter how long your contract is, the schedules are still reviewed and approved by your board annually.
Okay, so that's so is that the inexorable cost of living, et cetera, drives up naturally prices of employment. But we would then have an annual capability of adjusting our overall cost depending on our financial condition and also the level of service, how well things are being coordinated to go one way or the other.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, you always have that option to right. review. You don't have to wait for a budget cycle. If you have an issue, you can sit down and talk about the level of service. I'm going to Cambria fly after me.
okay.
And, yeah, that can be reviewed at any time.
Great,
because, again,
you.
Like I said, you negotiate locally with us. We serve as your staff and work for you.
Other questions?
I have just a following on that. It appears, then, that there's no way of having a multi-year union contract as part of this. In other words, we don't have the option of knowing what the cost might be the next year.
No, I mean, all you can look at the history and you can see that our costs don't fluctuate much. Mm-hmm. You know, if you hadn't noticed, they haven't been passing out a lot of raises to state employees.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, many of them find themselves furloughed 3 days a week. But, no, you are correct. If there were a negotiated increase, salary increase, that would be passed through because the state isn't allowed to subsidize local government. So you would be made aware of those costs and what potential impact it would have to your agreement. And vice versa, you know, we would need notice if you were to want to increase your contract and need, want additional services so we can prepare for that or to reduce your agreement, and we would have to make adjustments as well.
The other question was on the fact we maintain ownership of the vehicles and the buildings. Do we replace those according to a scale that you have, or would that be based on our opinion when they need to be replaced?
Well, we work with you to develop that. We have some good guidelines as to how to replace your equipment or, you know, how long they can remain in service. We have our mechanics expect them, and it's on safety, but typically you can expect, commercial chassis apparatus to last at least 15 years and custom 20 years. I mean, it's probably going to be very in line with what you're doing already, I assume. You have decent apparatus here.
Thank you. Director Cliff, did you have a question?
Well, not a lot of questions because I sat through the original discussion here and we had a lot of discussions then. But to the point Director Jellicott brought up here, that doesn't mean that the state can't have a multi-year union contract.
So that
we know what potential costs could be over if you've negotiated a 5-year contract with your employees that have set percentages, we would know that ahead of time.
You would know that, yes.
Okay.
And that's entirely possible. And that's the driving factor in the cost of an agreement because, again, it is really a labor agreement. You're hiring staffing and management for your fire department. You still are funding the rest of your operation, your equipment, and your day-to-day bills through your CSD.
And one other question. You said that there was transition for our employees. That includes contracted people like our chief, too, doesn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Board members, any other questions? Chief, I have just a couple of questions. You may have covered it, and I may have missed it. Forgive me if I did. Do you provide plan checking services?
Yes, we do. Okay. We have a fire marshal, full fire prevention bureau, and we do plan review and site inspections. And
do you set the rates for plan checking?
No, you would do that locally.
Okay.
We have a fee schedule. The county has a fee schedule, as does Pismo Beach. You can set that for your community.
Okay. We, as you know, we don't check plans in the usual sense of the word we do though for compliance with our fire code and so forth. Second thing, there's I guess for lack of a better word, a rumor that When there's an emergency somewhere in the state, CAL FIRE pulls out all of its employees and can leave a community unprotected. Can you, and if you'll indulge us by
sure.
just sticking around for a minute, we'll have these folks come up, and if they have questions of you, we can have them asked and you can provide the answers. The first is from Mihaela Burton.
Thank you, Board. Mihaela Burton, Cambria. Should I address the questions to you?
Please.
Okay. Firstly, I would like to thank CAL FIRE for putting out a fire at my house last month. I'd also like to thank Chief Miller for doing the investigation. The fire could have ended up very serious. I was shocked at how quickly some grass caught a redwood fence, and immediately two giant pine trees caught fire within 10 minutes, and it was on a hot Santa Ana day. It was at least 100 degrees. Originally, when I first moved here, and Chief Putney was our chief, he scared me. So I called, and because I live right next to the cemetery, you can see the graves from my house, I called up CAL FIRE and asked how they would fight a forest fire, because at that time I thought CAL FIRE took care of forest fires and our fire department took care of house fires. I could not understand why we needed two separate fire departments in such a small town. The person that I spoke with on the phone didn't want to get into a something contest with our local fire chief, but he said, we would send in crews to cut fire lines. We would bring in prowls. We would bring in bombers with retardant. We don't pick up seawater because people don't want seawater on their houses. Then I was told by Chief Putney that those bombers probably wouldn't be here because they'd be down south fighting a fire in Malibu or someplace. I never got a definitive answer on how we would fight a forest fire, because where the cemetery is, there really aren't any roads down into the forest. Those roads have been covered with fallen pine trees and debris for years. You can go all the way to San Simeon. You could have a fire raging. And so I would like to know how we would really fight a fire in the forest. Thank you.
Thank you. Chief, it's a question that is very complex, I'm sure, and you could probably spend hours. Is there a 5 minutes
yeah, I can give
or
a,
less
I can give a short response.
Okay,
first
good.
Of all, I'm very glad to hear we put the fire out.
So are we.
About that. And as far as fighting forest fire, wildland fire, first of all, those air tankers are here. They're here today sitting on the ramp in Paso Robles along with an air attack ship, and they are staffed. They're not staffed in the middle of the wintertime. They're on a callback basis, but as we speak, they are. And they're very close by. And one of the reasons that we have a pretty good success rate of not having too many large and damaging fires in San Luis Obispo County, as you have noticed lately, we've been burning Monterey County and Santa Barbara County north and south of us, but having those resources here are valuable. Any kind of a wildland fire is a cooperative response. As our mission, as the state fire department, we are charged with protecting watershed, state responsibility area, and that's why we have our state engines here, we have bulldozers, we have hand crews, and we have aircraft, and not only fixed wing, but we can access helicopters and the like. That's also done cooperatively with all of the local agencies, with Cambria Fire and Cayucas, Morro Bay, Los Osos, the county. We bring in those resources as well to assist us, and they'll come in and help us directly fight the wildland fire or protect structures. So, in any case in this county, it's a very cooperative arrangement. All of the fire departments here have automatic and mutual aid agreements with one another and also work closely with the state. So,
great. Okay. That fly that was bothering you is now up here. Do you do pest control? The next and last person to have a question is Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders. I appreciate the opportunity to ask the question. A couple of my questions that came up were answered during the presentation and
when some of the board members asked. But my question is, I have two questions. CAL FIRE responds now when there's a call, when there's an event. So how would it be different if CAL FIRE took over the fire department for the CCSD? And then could we still pursue the co-location with the ambulances ambulances at the fire station if we contracted with them? Thank you.
Thank you. Chief?
Okay, as to the first question, with us already responding, well, that wouldn't be an issue. That's an issue with the CSD, as far as if you choose to co-locate or if you choose to merge agency, all of those things are possible. CAL FIRE operates ambulances all over the state. I don't think that's what you're talking about. You're just talking about co-locating two agencies. If that's what you choose to do, that's fine with us.
Does CAL FIRE transport? Chief?
Yes, in areas where we're contracted to do so, we do that. The department I came from, we did. Many places, we're the Riverside County Fire Department, run many, many ambulances every day down there. It's done all over the state. We can provide whatever service is requested.
Director Cliff, did you have a question?
You provide paramedic services for Los Osos area now, but don't transport there, right?
That's correct. Yeah, okay. We do not transport in this county. Uh-huh. Right now you have the two providers, the Cambria Healthcare District and then San Luis Ambulance are the two providers in this county. Okay. So we have not been asked to do any transport.
So your paramedics in Los Osos, for example, interface with San Luis Ambulance. Your paramedics stabilize the patient and so forth, and then they're transported by San Luis Ambulance.
Correct. And right. Then they'll accompany the ambulance if necessary, just as you're doing in this community, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah. So. Exactly. Any other questions of the chief?
I have one question.
Yes, Director Chalker.
The fire season, is that something that's determined by the governor's office, basically, or is it?
Well, actually, it's determined within our department, actually based on my recommendation locally. We work, and we actually don't use the word fire season anymore, which is hard for me to get used to because we are now recognized as a state fire department, a year-round agency, all risk. We respond year-round to incidents, and we staff to some level year-round, even the state resources. So we are currently in our fall transition towards winter. In fact, this morning we shut down 5 state engines. We had 12. I shut down 2 a while ago, set down 5, but I kept 5 on, kept our air tankers on, our crews on, and our dozers on because we had some rain, but not enough for me to feel comfortable yet. So a little more rain, and you'll see us transition.
Terrific. Okay. Thank you, Chief. Board members, I have a suggestion. If there's a consensus that it would be worthwhile expending some resources, principally time, by the staff, then I would suggest that this matter be referred to the Emergency Services Committee, which consists of Director Clift and myself. And we can explore this further with CAL FIRE and at an appropriate time bring a recommendation back to the board.
Absolutely.
Director Clift?
I might also suggest that the board extend to that committee the ability to look at other alternatives than just contracting with CAL FIRE, whether you look at alternatives of different staffing within our own department and things like that, too, because we're really talking about staffing here.
Absolutely.
And so I would like to see it not just be a direct thing with CAL FIRE, but a whole review of several different options to bring back to the board.
That's certainly acceptable to me. Other board members, comments?
Just the thought of certain communities that you might be able to talk with would be very appropriate. Los Osos comes to mind, but right. Perhaps Chief would have a better one, or several. I think it's an excellent idea.
And even Morro Bay, who didn't contract.
Exactly.
Right.
So I think
absolutely.
I think
yes, Director D'Amico.
I appreciate very much, I think, what Muriel Cliff just said.
is that this may be the right time to look at your goals, which means that because every organization that gets set up, they seem to grow. They grow people, the community, or the people who staff the organizations look to grow, and sometimes you get further away from what the original intent and needs. I mean, there's a difference between needs and wants. At some point, we've got to understand what we need versus what we would like. And so I think it was very good that you showed that one document that kind of listed the key aspects of, in this case, the protection and fire and also maybe health safety, because it goes to the issue of how much do we supplement when we have a fire, an ambulance group, and how much do they do versus what we do, and it enters into the formula, and they get blurred after a while. So mm-hmm. I would just ask is that as you work on your deliberations, that might be a
proposal, and in the end they decided to stay independent at this time. I can't answer that, but you should talk to them and what their decision process was. One thing I would emphasize in any committee that you have looking at this, try to be as inclusive as you can. I've seen where this process has done well and where it's failed, and usually ones that aren't inclusive, that don't include community members and a labor representative, maybe even a representative from your reserve firefighters, community member at large, that really helps to get the information out in the community and get the input you need, because it needs to be an informed decision. It needs to have total community buy-in to proceed down that road, and that's very important. Okay.
Good advice.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions, board members? Chief, thank you very much for coming down. Thank you all. And it was very informative. And this matter is referred to the Emergency Services Committee, and we'll be considering all of the options, including the CAL FIRE option. I'm sure we'll be back visiting with you soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time today. Okay, we will move to the managers and board reports. Madam General Manager.
Okay, thank you. I noted in the report, just as a reminder, that next month's meeting is early too. So, and it's on a Monday again, December 14th, for the Christmas holidays. I attached to the general manager's report the report from our federal advocate, Greg Burns of Vanscoyuc. I also took the opportunity, Al Labossier and I, this month to meet with the Finance Committee, Directors Clift and McKinnon, to review the first quarter report for 2009-2010. It had a complete list of variances contained within the highlights, so we met on November 10th to go over that. Under labor relations, I make a note here that the personnel cost reductions that were proposed as part of the Prop 1A contingency plan for fiscal year 2009-10, we're working in negotiations among the SEIU members, which is the Service Employees International Union Local 620, and the Cambria Firefighters, or the IFF Local 4635, for these personnel benefit givebacks. So far, I've got management confidential staff in agreement, and I will report more next month. I note the holiday for Thanksgiving, November 26th and 27th. Our offices will be closed. However, we will have round-the-clock 24-hour answering service at 927-6223. I noted here as well that staff met with the Utilities Committee, and you'll hear from them during the committee report with regard to the prioritization of capital improvements and major maintenance programs. And the PROS Commission met on November 3rd, and their next meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, December 8th, which is a little bit off schedule as well. They quickly do a meeting, and then they have their annual, they convene to their annual holiday gathering, and it will be here. So I want to make that note as well, since our Suite 204 has now been surrendered and given back to the property owner. Moving on to finance, there were no disbursements in excess of $100,000, and the LAIF balance as of October 31st was $3,520,257. Moving on to Fire Chief's report. I had the personal pleasure of attending this year. Of course, Mark gives all of his stats and statistics for prevention and education, but I did want to send out a really good, great job to the staff and the community volunteers who worked the haunted house. I don't know if any of you have had the opportunity to go to the haunted house that's put on at the Cambria CSD Fire Department, but it was quite awesome. I had the pleasure to actually personally go to it this year with a family member of mine, and it's a lot of work. They not only put on all the prep work, but they actually work that thing all day, and I got to tell you, at dark, there were at least 100 people, maybe more, and then even when I was coming back after the little trick-or-treat down Wood Drive, there were still hundreds of people there at the fire department. So it's a very well-attended and very well put together, so I say great job to all the staff and all the community volunteers who support that very safe and Halloween event at the Cambria CSD Fire Department. Before I move on, I was going to let Bob Gressens deliver his report because he's here and he has a little bit of an addendum. I wanted to offer my happy Thanksgiving to the directors and the community at large, but I also want to send out a great big thanks to the staff. They've been fabulous through this challenging year we've had, and I want to mention each and every one of them by name. I am happy to be employed with them. They've done a great job. They're highly competent and professional. And I hope that each and every one of them has a happy Thanksgiving and has a wonderful time with their family and friends. And last but certainly not least is our district engineer, Bob Gressens. I couldn't do this job without him, and I'm very thankful for them this holiday season, and I wish you all very happy Thanksgiving as well with your families. So, Bob?
Did you include Corey? I was just...
Ooh, goodness. Gosh, you remember yes. Corey. Oh, thank you very much. I would never live that down. Corey Ryan is our permit specialist, and she's been relocated to the fire department, working very closely with him. Thank you, Director.
Let's not forget Corey. Well, thank you, Tammy. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone else. I echo that. I'll go briefly through some of the highlights for the period of October 22nd to roughly November 10th when this report was written. First project that we've been busy with is the Western Main Street Overlay Coordination. As you're aware, the Eastern Main Street is scheduled to be overlaid, or Western Main Street, by the county. Jim Adams and the Water Department staff have been very busy out there completing service relocations and a couple of new hydrant services so that we don't have to tear into the new roadway surface in the near future. Jim's just done a great job, along with his staff, in expediting that work to get out of the way in time. I feel that Jim deserves a great deal of credit in being creative and figuring out ways to not only get the work done, but do it as a cost-effective manner. So he's just been great to work out in the field on that and keeping the bottom line in mind for the district as that work proceeds. The work also resulted in the abandonment of an undersized and maintenance-prone 2-inch steel line that was patched numerous times and repaired. So that pipe is now gone out of the system. And they provided a new service to several businesses, including the Pewter Plow Playhouse, with that work. On the wastewater treatment plant, the biosolids was completed actually in October before the rains hit. Mike Kukinall reported to me that the biosolids hauling costs for this year were $16,388. That's a low number compared to over $200,000 per year that was typically spent before the screw press went online. So you can see the benefit that staff provided by putting that screw press in there and getting that running. On our desalination project, we've had some good news with the Army Corps. They did execute a contract for the environmental assessment. Last time reported they were behind schedule on that. The environmental assessment is for the federal environmental clearance process that's needed in order to do the geotechnical investigation out on the Santa Rosa Creek beach area. So that work was actually awarded to Noble Consulting, and they have a subconsultant called Chambers Group, Inc. that will actually do the environmental work.
I did check on Chambers Group, Inc., through a person I know at the Metropolitan Water District of Orange County. They got some excellent review out of them and highly recommended. So that's going to start soon in getting the EA done and out through the review process. The besides that work, the county or the Army Corps is still completing its local credit review. They've made some progress on that, and it's now out to several other departments, including their San Francisco division, for further review. So work is occurring there as well. I do have a brief presentation that will follow the summary report on cost per acre foot, which is in direct response to questions that came up during October 22nd. So I'm saving that to the last here, and I'll get back to it. There was also a meeting held with the Water Emergency Alternative Citizens Committee on November 5th. Our next WEAC meeting will be held 3 o'clock at the Vets Hall in the Fireside Room, and that is on January 7th. I may have the wrong room. I'm sorry, but it's here.
Which one is it?
The dining hall room. That starts at 3 o'clock on January 7th. Beyond that meeting, I did attend a County Water Resource Advisory Committee on November 4th. That discusses countywide issues, including their updating a countywide water master plan. That was quite interesting. During that meeting, the PG&E meteorologist gave a guest appearance as Mr. John Lindsay, and he talked about the techniques and technology used by the Weather Service, and he also noted that there may be a moderate El Nino occurring, which would indicate next year's precipitation would be either average or maybe even slightly more than average. So that was good news, I thought. I have well-level charts. I don't have these on over a dollar basis. Typically, it's called a present worth, or some people prefer the term present value. The types of costs that we look at include the initial construction cost, as well as the annual costs that are brought back to a current cost, similar to how you do a mortgage. Next slide. This just illustrates typical present worth analysis. You use a timeline that would have a, let's see if I could, usually up to 30 years for an engineering project. You look at the upfront cost for construction, including design, which is that second illustration down. It just shows the initial cost in year zero. And then you look at annual operation maintenance cost over the life of a project, and you equate that to a present worth cost. So that's what that third line item is, to indicate that you could take costs similar to a mortgage on a house, where you'd equate that to a lump sum payment at time zero. You add all that together, and that gives you a present worth cost. So the next table I have shows what some of those present worth costs are. So next slide, please, Carlos. Anyway, these are the water master plan alternatives that were screened in the Kenny Jinks Water Master Plan report, and my next table discusses the ones that are related to potable water. We had some independent Nacimiento pipeline alternatives. We had a Whale Rock reservoir exchange for Nacimiento water, seawater desalination, recycled water, and there were two dam projects that one was on San Simeon Creek and the other was on Jack Creek. Next slide, please. The cost, and these are described in more detail in the Water Master Plan in a response to comments section. I just summarized the ones that were related to potable water here in the interest of being brief. But the independent Nacimiento pipeline over the mountain had initial costs of about $22 to $23 million, depending on which route was used. The present worth, 30-year present worth cost was about $31 to $32 million, and that equated to about $1,400 to $1,430 per acre foot. The Whale Rock Exchange had an initial cost of approximately $19 million, 30-year present worth about $25 million, and a present worth dollar per acre foot cost of $1,400. This fly just loves whoever's speaking. The seawater desalination, this is the one with the solar power, had $17.2 million, a present worth cost of $22.3 million, and a present worth dollar per acre foot of about $1,230. Then we had the two dam projects, the one on San Simeon Creek, $10.7 million initial cost, $12.8 present worth cost, and then a $610 cost per acre foot. And then similarly, the Jack Creek Dam was about $10.3, $14.2 present worth, and $680 per acre foot. Now, all these analysis here, they don't use any outside funds, so we're not biasing them by the word a grant for DCEL, for example. This is what the costs actually are. It's based on an earlier 2008 cost basis comparison with an inflation rate of about 4% per year. I did that simply because that's what we did when we were doing the EIR in the response to comments. So I didn't go back and try to update everything to current or midpoint construction and so forth. I just kept them all the same. The dams are not recommended in the water master plan to their being located within critical steelhead habitat. So those kind of fell out of the picture as the water master plan moved forward. And just to give you a ballpark figure, because I know there was request about costs for groundwater and so forth, the current non-surcharge, now this is our rate of selling it to the customer, so it's not a wholesale versus retail cost per se, but the current non-surcharge CCSD residential rate, and this is the lowest rate for 0 to 6 units, comes to about $1,764 per acre foot. That's what our customers are paying right now for potable water. And as you recall, it of course goes up in cost per unit foot as you use more water. This is for 0 to 6. And then currently, just to give you a ballpark number, if you take the overall water budget of $1.8 million and divide it by 800 acre feet per year, and granted we're a little bit less than that now, that comes about $2,250 per acre foot, just to give you a rough idea, okay? And then, I'll stop at this point, and if you have any questions, I'd be glad to respond further. But that just gives you a quick snapshot of present worth cost. Mm-hmm.
Director McKinnon, question?
This is excellent, and I think the community must see this. On top of it, there's some pros and cons, a list that would be added to almost every alternative, particularly as you look at the dams and the reservoirs, which would be, if a probability of success would be very low of trying to get permitting and so forth. And similar with Nassiuma.
Different.
So our overall cost of 22 acre feet, now you go to the seawater desalination. The rest was good information, but it's meaningless in this stage of the game. $17 million for the initial cost of a treatment plant. And you're saying that the forward 30-year operating cost of that plant's only worth $5 million in today? Or should they be added together so that it's $50 million over the 30 years?
No, we're saying that's the total. That is the total, and one of the reasons, too, is with solar power, you're offsetting a lot of the power cost with that option. Mm-hmm. By spending a little more money up front for the renewable power system, you're reducing the O&M cost long-term on the project. That's one of the benefits of having the renewable power system tied mm-hmm. to that project.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't want to try to pick. If you could just give me what you think is the backup for these numbers, I'd appreciate it.
Sure.
And give it to the Utilities Committee.
Okay.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Just a point. You're saying the alternatives are worthless of comparing?
The chart is of where we are today. We were looking at the issue of what's our present annual cost of water to our customers, which for the 0 to 60 is $1,764.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is we're studying desal as our alternative.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones have been worked over for the last 10, 15 years.
Yes, and
so
they're still...
They're of no value anymore because...
They're of value by comparison because the community keeps bringing them up as alternatives. That's very important, I think.
But he's saying now, I believe what he's saying is that the production cost of seawater on a present value is $1,230 an acre foot as of today.
That's correct.
That's right. That's what he said.
And that's what I'd like to see, because I know of no other location that has anything near that.
Exactly.
And I'm not making a
decision. And that's the good news.
I'm not trying to pick which way I would say we should go. Mm-hmm. It's just that I don't want to see information that, let's say, 5 years from now, if it's any different or much higher, did we mislead people?
Correct.
And that's what I... So I have to see where the 17.2 gets to only 22.3 in 30 years. Because if you do not, and I just want to bring this up, true present value analysis also looks at, I will tell you, and you can call Morrow Bay, the membrane exchange cost over a 30-year period is phenomenal.
I think we had a 7-year life on the membranes.
If the backup is there, I want to make sure that the Utilities Committee can fully back the issues that we present to the community.
I'm sure the district engineer can provide that.
Great.
Good. Okay. Any other questions of...
I was thinking one thing is with the solar element, you're not relying on or not depending on the cost of electricity in 30 years' time. That's the good news, right? I mean, you're virtually generating your own, so that...
Drives down... It does drive down the O&M cost for sure. Does that conclude your presentation?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And your report is concluded, Madam General Manager. I have several requests to speak on this. First from Mahala Burton.
Mahala Burton, Cambria. Thank you, Directors, President. Is it possible to have the PowerPoint put on the website? I asked the General Manager for a PowerPoint on the website. She never responded to me by email. But I could barely read that. And I don't have cable, and there is no video on slow span. So if you don't have cable, it's a discrimination unless you buy the tape.
We can put it on the website.
Okay, I appreciate that. I'll direct this to the board, but it's the question that on what Mr. Gresham said on several counts. When are we going to break ground on the geotechnical? The Army Corps paid Diaz Yorman almost $500,000 for a contract to design the geotechnical, which will be drilling, and it's also secret because we really don't know what the plan is, because when I've asked, the general manager said that it's top secret and we can't interfere with the Army Corps of Engineers. I might screw things up if I really ask the question. So I don't know exactly what's going on and when are we going to break ground. That's a question. The second question, have that right? Proposition.
Well, there's a process that Measure P has built into it that, if complied with, would allow the district to export water beyond its boundaries. But it's a very daunting process.
Right. The community would have to vote, I guess a 50% vote, and amend the water master plan. Isn't that about what it takes?
I forget the precise language. Should remember it because I
that is it,
helped draft it. But
I read it recently.
Yeah.
Okay, the rumor is that San Simeon is putting pressure on our services district to get some of our desalinated water. Is there any truth in that?
They have asked us whether or not they can be included in the desalination plant. Mm-hmm. And Ms. Burton, we have to comply with all of the laws that govern the district, including Measure P, which was an initiative passed by the voters. Mm-hmm. So, we're constrained pretty seriously by what we can do.
But that doesn't answer my question. Would you entertain that? Entertain giving our water to San Simeon? Then that means we would have to increase from 600 acre feet per year, because Director Chaladot is convinced that we're going to have this drought and all of the cows will die if we don't have the drought, and it'll come and we have to have desal.
I don't think anybody can answer that question. We have to take this process one step at a time. The first aspect of the process is to find out if the technology that we want to use is going to work. And that's what we're focused on. And that's what the Corps of Engineers is working on. So once we get to that point and we have a determination made as to whether or not the technology that we propose is going to work, then we can go to the next step. But to try and resolve all of these questions now, I think would be an exercise in futility, because we don't even know if we have a project yet.
But still, that's not answering my question about San Simeon. We have Proposition P, and we're not supposed to be, according to that, giving our water to any other municipality.
I understand, and we, as I said, we will comply with the law. Whatever the laws are that govern the district, I'm sure that they will be complied with.
And that's Proposition P.
That includes Proposition P.
So we could then tell San Simeon, the people spoke, we voted for Proposition P, you can't have our water.
There is a process that is built in to Proposition P that would allow the district to export water. But I don't think anybody's even giving any of that the remotest consideration right now, because we have to go through a geotechnical process just to find out if we've got a project. And so once we get to that point, then we can start considering some of these other issues if the geotechnical project pans out.
Okay, well then I'd like to remind you that the Whale Rock Exchange, excuse me, is very viable. And if you don't believe that, you can go to San Luis, who has many, many engineers, and they are relying on that. Our county gets first grabs
at
Nacimiento water. That dam exists for two big reservoirs, and it's never dried up.
Thank you. Next request to speak is from Elizabeth Bentenhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I'm Elizabeth Bentenhausen from Cambria, and I want to start by saying that I often shop a lot at Rite Aid and Albertsons and Borders books. And one of the things that's intrigued me about California since I moved here in 2002 is, and more so in the recession, I suppose, you get about $130 of groceries, and you pay with your Visa. Or I pay with my Visa, and they say, thank you very much for shopping here. You have saved $29.42. And I say to them consistently, as is my personality, I would have saved more had I spent more, wouldn't I? And they say yes. So I didn't have a chance last meeting to respond to Bob Gresson's comments about how we are saving more and more and more money on our 25% on the diesel costs, because we're spending more and more, but it's a lesser percentage of the more and more that we're spending, which, of course, perhaps if we hadn't spent it, period, we would have saved even more. So I'm my mother's daughter from the Depression, and I do not believe that I have to spend more money to save more money. Now, I want to ask a question in that regard. Is it in the planning of the board and the staff of CCSD to pressure the Army Corps of Engineers to be more fully disclosing of their expenditures and revenues than they have been in this quarterly report, which is a very, very thin and amorphous listing of fiscal responsibility? That's my first question. What, if anything, do you plan to do to make sure that your $166,000 is well spent? The second question is, since this is for the completion of the environmental assessment, when will, according to what the Army Corps says, when will we be informed here in Cambria of how much of the environmental assessment has been done already so that it can now be completed for $70,000? When will we be informed of the standards that the Army Corps of Engineers is required by federal law to use? Because searching their website, I found nothing. when they do the environmental assessment, there was a comma in that sentence. When will we be informed of the federal standards that they are obligated to use for the environmental assessment? And when will we be informed as to our option as the community to respond to the environmental assessment? Friends, if the feds want to pay, 75%, well, heck, it's my tax money. I don't just pay rates here on water in Cambria. I pay federal income tax. I don't want the Army Corps of Engineers to have the latitude of just informing us quarterly how they're spending my tax money. So those are two questions. How are you going to go about keeping track of them? Not just with the lobbyists. I know, the federal advocate. We don't have lobbyists anymore that we hire. How are you going to keep track of how the Army Corps of Engineers is spending your money? And for us as well, what are the federal standards for the EA, the environmental assessment, and how do you determine how much of it has been done, how much still needs to be done, and how you're going to inform your constituents about the content and cost thereof? Thank you.
Thank you. I'll answer the second question first. The Corps, like every other federal agency, when it undertakes a project like this, has to comply with the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA. NEPA is the federal equivalent of the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA. So if you want to know what the standards are for preparation of an environmental document by the Corps of Engineers, you can find those standards in NEPA. And there are websites galore on NEPA that you can look at that can serve as a guide for you. I'm going to ask the district engineer about the interface with the Corps and the tracking of expenditures and how we're handling that.
Certainly. As far as the review of the work product, I review drafts by them. I'm in contact with their project manager in their Los Angeles division. So I can certainly drive down there and meet with them one-on-one if need be. I've done that in the past. Typically, we exchange drafts, and we communicate back and forth on a regular basis. So I do get involved directly with them, and I try to summarize that in my monthly reports here. As far as the quarterly report, I can certainly look in those directions to see where we can add more line item detail to it if that is a problem. So I'll check into that with them.
Thank you. Next request to speak is from Mary Webb.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak. I'm Mary Webb, Cambria resident for 22 years. The Kennedy-Jenks study was completely disputed. There were many comments on the Cambria Water Master Plan EIR where I don't know how many people disagreed with the results of that study. I wished you still had your chart up on the board there about how much diesel costs an acre foot. I completely disagree with that number, and I don't think you can find that number anywhere on any website, on any diesel plant that's running today. $1,230 an acre foot is such a low ball figure, it's not even funny. It's between at least $2,000 to $4,000 an acre foot for desal water, at least 1950. So since you don't have these charts on the website beforehand, there's no way we even have these things in our hands when you come and throw these numbers like that up on the board. So I just have to completely dispute the number. The number you had for desal for construction is $17 million with a solar array. There are at least one of the CCS opposition to what the citizens have voted on. That is a vote. That's a real vote. That's the first time we've actually gotten to vote. So we did vote that if you were going to do this folly desal plant, which we're all going to have to pay up the wazoo for, that we are not going to send it outside the boundaries of Cambria. So against the citizens' wishes, you are in discussion right now with selling desal water to San Simeon. So that means not only is Cambria going to grow, San Simeon is going to explode. There is a lot line adjustment happening right now on Hearst property, where they're taking open space and dividing dividing it into all these little lots. Why? So they can sell it for residences, gentleman farms. And where's that water going to come from? Yeah, guess what, folks? From us.
Thank you for your comment. The last request to speak is from Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders. This is actually not about desal. It was actually a question on the general manager's report, something that wasn't reported, I believe, at the first October meeting, which was the September meeting. There was an item on the agenda about somebody being hired for the wastewater department, and I thought it was being brought back. Maybe I just missed that item.
It will be.
Okay. It just hasn't been yet.
That's
okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay, that concludes the general manager's report. We'll now move to board member and committee reports, and I believe the Utilities Committee has a brief report, and Director D'Amico.
Just one question on the manager's report.
Yes.
If general manager can enlighten me, I know we've talked, and I think Alan Lavoisier has mentioned in yourself, we have, you know, there's diurnal flows in our cash flow. When is the low end?
We're so in it now. We're
okay,
in it now.
Because my comment is the observation that in July we had $3,927,000. Mm-hmm. We now have $3,520,000. Mm-hmm. And I realize to comments before in previous meetings, we did add additional monies for capital projects that were not originally scheduled because, like the paving and the like, we added some work there. There was some additional work at the plant. We also budgeted, spent money towards the core. So I had it in my mind that I knew there was like a $200,000 to $250,000 adjustment, if you will, against what I would have thought would have happened. But this seems to have been over the last 5 to 6 months been going down. And so now we then have the billings and then future coming in.
Yeah, property tax receipts come in December.
That was the other thing.
They do. They come in December, and then we had three payrolls in October. So when you have that third payroll, that also makes the dive down too.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Two payments of property tax revenues that are owed the district, one in December, the other in April.
April.
Yeah, they actually trickle in every month, but they're just very minute.
Yeah,
but the
right.
largest one's December, and then the next largest one is April.
Exactly. Any other questions of the general manager?
I was going to say, you brought up the property tax. Does the newspaper show that property taxes in Cambria were down for this year? Was it 0.2% or 2%?
It's 0.2%.
Okay, that's good.
And we budgeted conservatively 2% lower than last year's receipts.
That's good. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for board member and committee reports. I believe the Utilities Committee has a brief report. And
yes,
Director D'Amico?
I'll give that. Director Chaldicott and myself met with the general manager, Bob Greshens, Jim Adams, and Mike Kuykendall, which includes our utility group. Our purpose was to look at what I call the major capital projects that we would look at as a potential for a 218 process coming up. The key areas of the projects that I think we had general agreement on amongst from the water and wastewater, key being the water side at this stage, the rodeo grounds pump station replacement, Stewart Street water storage tank, and then the SCADA section of the water. SCADA is both in water and wastewater. We've spent a little over $600,000 for studies, design, and actually equipment being delivered to the CCSD, which is in storage. We have to complete those projects to get them out into the field so that our control and data acquisition at our wells and the treatment plant can be more managed by the staff, efficiently pumping regimens also. Part of the work that would be included would be our overall payment for the Moonstone Bridge replacement pipelines, which had been unallocated. Bob Greshens has done a good job of bringing us up to date on expenditures to date. As you know, and either the last meeting or the prior meeting, we did authorize the consultant to go a little further with Stewart Street tank and rodeo grounds so that we'd have be ready with an EIR, and hopefully by then we'd also have a more solid cost to complete, cost of construction, which would be financed in any future bonding. So thank you.
Thank you for the report. Any questions? Director McKinnon.
Yeah, I have a question. In the report that you made for both water and wastewater, major maintenance issues, why are we doing the self-leveling camera system? Was that originally part of the program for maintenance and wastewater?
Are you looking at the expenditure report?
Yeah.
That was to replace a TV camera that was broken.
Okay.
And no longer functional, very old.
It was just something that came up.
Something happened, we didn't budget
for
it.
Very good. I didn't think it was in the major maintenance issues that we approved.
It's just that it's above the $5,000 asset, fixed asset cost. That's why it's down there in that line item.
Okay.
Any other questions of the Utilities Committee? Okay. Director McKinnon, did you have something that you wanted to bring up under board member reports?
I have some comments. Certainly from the standpoint of the Finance Committee, we did review the quarterly report, and it was kind of refreshing to see that we can project both the water and wastewater departments as being fiscally sound in the black for this fiscal year. On another issue, and I think it's important that we begin to look at this, and I suggest also that we consider agendizing the subject. And let me just briefly explain. We requested months ago for the forgiveness of pay raise for staff. We also had, and that was rejected, we also had a discussion that came about from, I think it was Ron Walters, I think was the name, that basically said, we as a board, and this is saying the board historically or whatever, projected a 4+2% increase in staffing, cost of living, or whatever you want to call it, increase in salaries and fringes, without any idea of revenue projections, of planning for the associated revenue. I see, and it was touched on by Director D'Amico, that our reserves, our general reserves, are being nibbled away at and reciting really about $275,000 have been going out little by little and appropriately. And that's what the reserves are for. They're for emergencies, unforeseen situations that we have to address. And we, I think, are looking at either another increase in rates, or from my standpoint, our only alternative, and this is to be considered, I would like to see it considered next meeting, and that is a cut in staffing. And I would say that if we would do that, that number should be roughly 10%. A 10% cut in staffing would allow us to begin to balance equipment with people. And it is, I think, important that we do both, and we both do them both effectively so that we can provide the services and as well as providing the infrastructure that's required for services. And I don't know where the rest of the board is, but I would consider very strongly a staff reduction.
Board members, comments?
Well, I think that wasn't where I was, but it's true. There are things that happen that have to be addressed, which happens on the asset side of the equation. Alternatively, there's either you raise more money or you look at the cost of, I'll just call it cost of employment. because whether it's, as you can see, I know we're all familiar now, and I think the Cal Fire man referred to it, there are two ways to do it. One is a staff reduction, and that would be in true headcount, if you will. The alternative is either forego or reduce or give back on to 15% unemployment. I don't think it's too much to ask of the what's called public servants to reflect somewhat what's happening in real industry, in real life, if you will, the general workers' lives. So the idea that we never lose a staff member versus the 12 or 15% out and the people who pay the taxes to support them is untenable. And I think, like I said, even Sacramento has realized they've got to do something. Santa Barbara County, San Luis Obispo County. But yet the intransigence, apparently, of the community workers that we is not happening here. And I don't want to impose something, but if that's what we have to do to maintain fiscal responsibility, and this sounds, I know Elizabeth has says you sometimes you spend money to save money, but the reality is we do need capital infrastructure. We do need these couple
both.
Of projects.
You need both.
Those projects on a 30-year bonding, whatever the number is going to be several hundred thousand, a couple hundred thousand dollars a year in new costs. And people may want tanks and fire protection, but the reality is, last one, I think, when I talked to the general manager, our last rate increase, which, between the two of them, you're talking 12, 15%, brought us $370,000, I think, a year. $370,000 will support $3,700,000 worth of bonding. Well, it also works the other way. Three people or four people, which is roughly in the 10%, can support the bonding too. So there's way, and that's just the water, and I don't want to get only water, but the general side too of the business, because our general costs and our cost of fire service is rising. That comes out of general fund. Parks and Recreation comes out of general fund. So I think it's something we need to look at. And for the public's view, discussion, or understanding, and I believe Director McKinnon's, the constraint of, which is great, Brown Act, but we can't, this is the only venue this board has to discuss our philosophies and our focuses. And unless we get it out in the open and here, and that gives the opportunity of the community to respond, if they have a complete, I'm here and I'll listen, I have views, but if I hear a challenging, positive influence of discussion, then I can go the other way. I can back off. I mean, not that I changed my mind. I just said, look, if that's what the people wish to do and they're willing to spend the money to do this and to fund 6% raises, be my guest. I'm only one ratepayer or taxpayer. But as a board member, I have to bring it to the people's attention.
Well, the fact of the matter is the SLO County, $24 million deficit that they're working on right this moment. The state of California is going to have the same scenario that the smoke and mirrors that occurred last year. So we can't expect any benefit other than maybe a negative benefit from any of that organizations. I'm saying it only because we have asked for staff to forgive, to share the pain. There's foreclosures in this community. There's people that are not getting Social Security increases for not this year, but maybe next year as well. People that have lived here for a long time, and they're hurting. And at the same time, we're getting stonewalled, and our only option is staff reduction. So from that standpoint, and that's not the only option. I mean, there's other options.
Sure.
But it's becoming less and less, and we have very few choices. And I do believe we have to do this. We have to do infrastructure in order to supply services just as people to do the work. So that was the reason for my request.
Let me add a little perspective here. First of all, let me say that the general manager has developed a furlough plan. It's on her desk, and it was going to be presented at this particular board meeting, but she's had some ongoing discussions with the SEIU union, and she wanted the extra couple of weeks to try and bring those discussions to some sort of a successful conclusion. The executive committee has instructed her that December is it. If there isn't an agreement with SEIU by December, then this matter is going on the agenda and the board will consider a furlough plan. So that's in the works. Second thing is we've got a budget, mid-year budget review coming up in January, and I think that will give us a golden opportunity to kind of assess where we are and where we're going and what we need to do in terms of further cutting costs so that we can get to the end.
And yet we are strapped with a contract that provides four plus. That's been referred to as a cost of living increase. That's not a cost of living increase. That's a raise. That raise comes along with increased PERS contribution, increased other contributions. And I think it's just a reality that we are restricted in one area, especially in the general area, by those flies multiplied. But anyhow, the we're just sitting here looking at a situation that's going to go downhill if we don't get on it right away. And so I hope the public understands that, and I hope the beneficiaries of the contracts that that exist right now understand that we're going to be forced to take some kind of action that keeps us fiscally sound and to the extent possible reduces any kinds of needs for additional rates or such. And so for my two cents in this discussion is that we are under constraints that only give us certain ways. And you heard today the Cal Fire are talking about their people pay 8-9% on the PERS. What do our people pay?
Zero.
Health insurance.
Health insurance. What do our people pay?
5%.
I don't know what. I don't know either. But those are the things that we're really having to look at simply because we have to come and ask for money and face the 218 rules. We also have the restriction of the county saying, you know, you're really lucky. You're only going to get 0.2% less than what you got last year, not the projected 2% or so that we talk about on tax bills that everybody has just had for many years gotten so used to just expecting your taxes are going to go up 2%. That isn't the case anymore, and that's the reality. So I completely agree with what's being discussed by Director D'Amico and Director McKinnon, and we're just going to have to make a decision. And I think December is probably a drop-dead date to make a decision for the future.
It is. Okay. Yes, Director.
I just think that we have to remember the number of positions which have been eliminated, like utilities manager and assistant financial manager. So I think the only real positive direction is it gives give backs on the individual employees. You know, the luxury of just dismissing an employee or two is, I don't think, is on the cards because the district needs every one of them. So I think give backs are the only way to go. Thank you.
But if we hadn't had those fortunate occurrences occur, we'd be even in a worse position.
Yeah. Yes, we would. Right. Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, there just isn't a whole lot of money. These are very lean times, and we need to be nimble, and we need to adjust accordingly. And we'll be making some hard decisions in December. Any other board member reports or board committee reports? I have a request. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to give a report on the on my visit with Assemblyman Sam Blakesley last week.
Okay.
Mainly because it's been in the news with a water bond, and it's SB 1 through 8, depending which one you want to take. And it seems coming back on the discussion of the state's finances, it's interesting they want to float an $11 billion bond. I'm not sure who's going to line up for that. But the only good news, if that bond ever does get floated, is there's about $1 billion for conservation and recycling, which I think is the only area that we would really be possibly get anything. But I think the important thing is they're coming up with a way of managing the delta. I'm sure they've tried it before, but I think right now there's grounds for a good governing body which will be not hijacked by any particular interest. And I think what's driving it is they say that if there was a seismic event in the delta, the Southern California would lose water for about 2 years, which is enough to get their attention, because the levees would just disappear into the mud. So that's the reason for that, plus, of course, the environmental issues and so on. So they're looking at a stewardship council, which will deal with the delta. They're also looking at groundwater monitoring, which is something we've discussed. But the idea is that the groundwater monitoring will go back to a central location, so they'll see whether the state's overdrafting or not, which makes sense. And the other thing is they want to reduce water demand by 20%. But they're looking at people that use more than 100 gallons per day per person, and we're way below that, so I think we'll be okay. I sincerely hope so. And then the other thing they're going to do is they're going to go after the illegal water diversions, which have been happening for forever, I guess, and there will be some penalties involved. And I guess that will affect people that have been overdrafting their water tables for years, and they'll suddenly find out they're not allowed to. So that was basically the... some of the discussion with Sam. I really appreciate the fact he really is looking at this from the point of view of solving it rather than just making political capital. And it was a good meeting. Thank you.
Any questions of the director?
Wastewater system up and running in a really good way right now. We are not a city. We're not building an empire here. And we're not going to get more rate increases as long as our money is being spent, $6,000 a month, on lobbyists in Washington for desalination when the community has not voted for desalination. So, and you're not going to get it through rate increases. You better do it through cuts. So go for it. And why wait till Christmas?
Thank you. Tina Dickerson is next.
Tina Dickerson, Cambria again. And I have to, many of the things Mary just said, I have to agree with. And Director McKinnon, when you came on board in January, I remember specifically you asking for cuts to be made by the general manager to look at where cuts could be made. I remember the discussion of a 10% cut across the board. The CFFR, CCSD worked for months on trying to get help to you to reduce the budget. And what I'm noticing is, for one thing, where's the finance manager? He never shows up at the board meetings anymore. Mr. Labossiere, where is he? So Mr. Gresham seems to be giving us our financial information for the district, along with the president. So what is going on? I mean, we asked for transparency. We want transparency. When you talked about Mr. McKinnon, Director McKinnon, those members of the community on Social Security, I happen to be one of those now. No increases. So I'm working at a couple of little stores to help out with our family situation. My husband, for 4 years, in a very well-respected college, 0% COLA. And this year, their health insurance benefits went up 25%. Our portion every month is $600 for health insurance. And you guys can have these 24-hour short-notice meetings to send off $166,000 to the Army Corps when we're supposed to have a $3 million credit. It has got to stop. And we are not going to support some other rate increase that you think you could shove down our throats because you think that everything's hunky-dory, Director Chaldicott. Well, it isn't. You never stand up for the people. And it's time you did, because if you don't, I hope you're out of here in 2010. Listen to us. We're not stupid. We are here because we believe in this town. and it's time you guys listen to us, and I appreciate the ones who do very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Jerry McKinnon is next. I'm sure you'll rise to the occasion.
Jerry McKinnon, charter member of the IOMC,
yes,
the Inquisitive Old Man's Club, and I just have a couple of questions to ask you. Based upon the deep interest that many of the Cambrians have in the process that you use to come to your decisions, it's not superficial. We're very interested in the process and how and thereafter. Now, on the capital improvement projects, have you determined a priority? Which is most important? Which one are you going to accomplish first, and which one can you postpone? The second question that I have is, are you going to finance these in a pay-as-you-go process, which at one time was discussed, or do you intend to float one big bond to cover them all and tie us up that way? Because those kinds of things tie to the rate increases. We don't mind paying. Me and my mouse in my pocket don't mind paying for something that gives us our money's worth. But we would just like to know how you're going to do the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry McKinnon. I don't want to put words in the mouths of the Utilities Committee representatives, but I can say it's probably a little early to give you a definitive answer. The recommendations from the Utilities Committee will be coming to the board. Yes, they've considered the priorities and will determine then what the best way to proceed is, whether it's pay-as-you-go or some other way. With that, unless there are any other questions or comments from board members under item 6B, what I propose to do is just handle the consent agenda, and then we can take a short recess. Is that satisfactory, board members? Okay, item number 7 is the consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. The general manager will read the items.
7A is to...
We have no hearings and appeals today, so we will move to item number 9, regular business. This is a continued item, item 9A, which is consideration of a resolution certifying the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve Master Environmental Impact Report. Madam General Manager?
Okay, thank you. This is the continued item from last month, except there's one addition, and that's to approve the change order for the Morrow Group that we talked about last month and including all of the costs up to date. So you'll see the three recommendations there are to adopt Resolution 50-2009, which approves the certification of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve Master EIR, and adopt Resolution 54-2009, including all of the exhibits approving the revised community park plan dated November 10th, authorize the general manager to sign the notice of determination on behalf of the CCSD, and then adopt Resolution 56-2009, approving the change order for the Morrow Group. You'll see in the fiscal impact section that we discussed last month on October 22nd that there would be some additional costs with regard to this process, mostly centering around the revised community park plan, and now coming back to get this through its conclusion. So there will be an additional $5,083 required to make the revisions that are necessary, and we'll talk about those in a moment. So the projected amount above the contract award is $18,020, or 12.5%. As I mentioned last month, there's a 10% contingency in the purchasing policy that's approved by this board. So this would require your approval today, and that's why a Resolution 56-2009 is here for your approval or consideration and approval. So last month, there were four issues. Those were the parking on the West Ranch, the amplified sound on the East Ranch, the electric mower component to be deleted for use on the East Ranch, and changing the open meadow designation on the revised community park plan to future active recreation. You'll see here in the staff report that after careful examination of the conservation easement documents, it was determined, it's contained within that document, that the amplified sound is prohibited on the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, and so therefore it's not addressed or incorporated into the final master EIR. With regard to the open meadow on the revised community park plan, and you're going to see here in a moment, I'm going to turn this over to Shauna, and she's just going to step through so that the formal process is accomplished with regard to the CIR. But with regard to the open meadow, we talked about this area and what it could be designated in order to subside the concerns that the board had last month. And you'll see that it's labeled on the map now as informal active recreation area, in parentheses, non-irrigated. And then the other changes, we met with Ben Boris, the ranch manager, gave him one last looky-loo. You know, we all went through this page by page to make sure that there were no changes. And you'll see on the errata sheet anything that was expressed as a concern. And you'll see today I passed out a revised errata sheet because of the ranch parking that was a concern last month that was brought up by Director Cliff, or maybe several of you had that issue. If you'll note, and we put some copies back for the community today on this revised November 16th errata sheet, there are two changes, and it's to the under number two, the parking mitigation TC/MM-4. That's the paragraph that's replacing it, and I'm going to let Shauna go into to further discussion, but there were some... There was consultation by the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, and we recommended that after talking to them and knowing that you asked for the language to come back, that we rewrote or were suggesting that this be the mitigation measure in place of the one that was previously in the EIR or as a mitigation. And you'll see on number three, there's one word, on-site, that needs to be deleted in the transportation and circulation section on page V-164, mostly because that lot is not on the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. It's literally just right outside of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, so that word on-site needs to be removed, and that's up by the Huntington lot. So Shauna of Moral Group, I was going to call you up. You can kind of go down through these to maybe make a little bit more sense.
If you could go ahead and start the slideshow, please. Shauna Scott with Moro Group, a division of SWCA. I'll go ahead and go through all of the changes in your errata sheet as soon as that slide shows up. First of all, under noise mitigation, we deleted the mitigation measure that stated the CCSD shall avoid the usage of gas-powered turf mowers and shall encourage the use of electric mowers for turf maintenance at the request of the board. Also regarding noise impacts, we retained, as Tammy stated, the requirement for prohibition of amplification of noise, and the remainder of the measure reads any ranch preserve easement holder, the CCSD, and the general public. The parking study shall take into consideration the FRP conservation easement impacts to the FRP and neighborhoods adjacent to the West FRP. If the parking plan developed as a result of the parking study proposes on-site parking, such parking shall adhere to the provisions of mitigation measures GEO mitigation measure 1, 2, and 5, biomitigation measure 13, and cultural mitigation measures 1 through 8. I would also like to point out there are several other mitigation measures in the EIR that exist for any ground disturbance or trail development or accessory development on the West FRP that would, including erosion control measures, protection of biological resources, that would also apply to any ground disturbance that require this type of permit. Under traffic and circulation, in the text, the word on site has been deleted from the sentence that currently reads, the public access and management plan called for one on-site ADA parking space at the Huntington lot. As Tammy stated, it's actually off-site, so that word has been deleted. Biological section relating to the deletion of no vehicular parking shall be allowed on the Fiscalini Ranch has been deleted and is essentially replaced by the previous mitigation measure that talks about the parking study and actual determination of parking areas on the West FRP. Traffic mitigation measure 3 has been amended. It previously stated, upon preparation of informal informational publications regarding the West FRP, the CCSD shall include a description of and encourage alternative transportation methods to access the FRP, including trolley stops, bicycle routes, and pedestrian walkways. It's been clarified to add to the statement, upon preparation of informal publication regarding the West FRP, including but not limited to online resources, brochures, posters, and docent walk informational materials, just to further explain to the public and the decision makers the extent of the educational program and information. This is a map of the public access and resource management plan that was identified. It's actually an exhibit directly from the management plan showing the approximate areas of the parking. Of what's actually, this is what it includes. Well, some of the sites are actually are present parking, but at the time the management plan was developed, this was the exhibit that was used to direct access and parking on the ranch. And so the EIR, when it was prepared, used this as the project description. One clarification on the revised community park master plan. And the open meadow is now classified as informal active recreation area, non-irrigated, as shown here in this figure. And just to clarify, that would be just an area for people to kind of have informal active recreation use, you know, throwing frisbees, you know, playing with their kids, those kinds of activities. It would not be graded. There would be no turf, and there's no irrigation proposed in that area. We also had some clarifications that were added to the errata that were presented by the board or the ranch manager, Ben Bohr. Throughout the document, Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve and FFRP are clarified to state easement holder. This statement has been clarified. It originally stated the CCSD Fire Department currently maintains, et cetera, and so now it clarifies that the CCSD Ranch Manager actually conducts those tasks. Under Public Services and Utilities, a mitigation measure previously stated, upon application for land use and construction permits and prior to site disturbance for trail development, the CCSD, in consultation with Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, will develop a signage plan to address any safety signage needs on the FRP. It is now clarified to read, upon application for land use and construction permits and prior to site disturbance for trail development, the CCSD shall develop a signage plan in consultation with the easement holder, et cetera, just to clarify the actual process of preparing that plan. Again, it's a similar situation here with aesthetics measure 5, which previously stated the proposed signage plan shall be developed by the CCSD and Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. It now states the proposed signage plan shall be developed by the CCSD in consultation with the easement holder. Under Public Services and Utilities, this measure previously stated that the Cambria CSD Fire Department shall acquire a small vehicle capable of carrying rescue personnel, et cetera. And so based on further consultations with Mark Miller, the measure has been clarified to state mitigation measure water supply, mitigation measure 4, previously stated, proposed plan shall be reviewed and approved by the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve and State Coastal Conservancy, and the management plan shall be amended prior to well development. This has been clarified that the proposed plan shall be reviewed and approved by the State Coastal Conservancy and reviewed by the easement holder, just to clarify the process. This change is actually, it's applicable to two biological mitigation measures that required that replacement plantings be native to the Friends of to the FRP, and it has been clarified to the maximum extent feasible. Biomitigation measure 14, previously stated prior to initiation of construction activities, including trail improvements, and it has been clarified to state prior to initiation of construction activities, including trail construction, at the request of the ranch manager to clarify that issue. And that concludes the list of the errata, and I am available for any questions.
Any questions, board members?
Okay, are we any questions or just comments on the presentation? Because there are issues there that I find a little I need clarification more from probably counsel, because I found that a missing comma or the word "and" can bite you very hard later on.
It certainly
you
can.
Know that, right?
Lawyers get paid by the comma
and the right. Whereas.
Perhaps if you're going to go in that direction, let me explain a couple of things and my personal involvement in a couple of these items. With regard to parking, I think in many respects the draft EIR put us on the horns of a dilemma, because originally a recommendation, you will recall, a recommendation was made that a parking study be done to deal with on-site parking. The EIR assumed that on-site parking is necessary, and that indeed may be the case. Speaking with two representatives of the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve on Thursday, they called me and asked if I would sit down and meet with them. I heard them out, and I explained the situation that we are in from a legal point of view. I went back through the environmental impact report, and I couldn't really find any substantive information in the traffic study that was done or elsewhere in the EIR that would support a mitigation measure that requires preparation of a parking plan for on-site parking. I think one might reach that conclusion simply by observing the usual parking patterns at both ends of the west portion of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, where Windsor Boulevard and the Marine Terrace Trail intersect with the neighborhoods or abut the neighborhoods on either side. However, in terms of substantive information in the EIR, there just isn't a whole lot. So I thought that perhaps the best way to approach the issue of parking is to kind of start with a blank slate and not have a mitigation measure that is biased one way or the other, and just let the chips fall where they may. We have a parking study. The parking study looks at the impacts associated with all of the uses, including the uses on the ranch, the neighborhoods, et cetera, that would be impacted, that are impacted by parking, and the parking consultant then, based upon substantive empirical evidence, can tell us whether or not on-site parking is required, and that seemed to be acceptable to the representatives from the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. So that is the genesis of this mitigation measure TC-MM4. And I wanted to make sure, board members, that you understood, you understand where that came from. That also speaks to the deletion of one word from a paragraph in the EIR that's represented. It's recited here under number 3 on your errata sheet. The word on-site
comments, but yeah, that was fine to me. And I also, I don't know if anybody else wants to take it out of the picture, but I read the documents, and whether I agree with what happened 3 years ago, 5 years ago, you're not allowed to have amplified sound. It's an agreement everybody agreed to, and therefore it's that way. On the parking, I knew there was a deft hand in that rewording for the revision. But I do want the question I had and the clarification on TC-MM4, sir, counsel. And by the way, your visual had the wrong, had for of instead of from on the first line. But anyway, upon application for the first land use construction permits from the county, comma, and prior to site disturbance for future any further trail developments, a comprehensive. Is that saying we can't engage in a application or study on the for parking unless there's new trail improvements? Or is it just that there's two things that require the study?
Two things, the way it's worded.
That means that the parking study is being held hostage to a new further trail, as if all the existing trails have all the parking they need? I mean, I don't understand. We're talking about parking. Why does trail improvements get into the paragraph? This is typical of how you get bait and switched later on.
Yeah, council.
They're two separate things. That's fine.
Yeah, council may have his opinion. I can tell you what the intent is.
Yeah.
This is just a trigger mechanism. Nothing more, nothing less. If the district wanted to proceed with a parking study without these events happening, the district would be free to do that. All this says is that kind of as an outside date by which the parking issue has to be dealt with, if we are to apply for any construction permits or do any further trail improvements, then we have to concurrently with the applications for those do a parking study to resolve the parking issue.
Okay. And it'll work counter if for some reason the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch wish to have additional trails.
That's correct.
Then there's got to be a parking study.
That is correct.
Okay, so yeah. Goose and gander, that's great.
Yeah, it applies to everybody.
Yeah, okay.
Correct.
So I'm done. Thank you.
That was easy. Mm-hmm. Director Clift.
Since I brought up the parking issue thing, I probably should comment on it. This meets the things that I wanted done, which was basically the previous one that I objected to was it tied our hands, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't tie our hands. This makes it a situation in which we do the study, and whatever the study says, then we can go forth that way. And that's acceptable to me. And whether it's a new trail improvement or a new parking, either one of those can trigger the study, or we could do the study anyhow, and that doesn't bother me. At first, I was concerned about the fact that the A through F on the original was being pulled out because we had thought those were, fairly good guidelines. But this one here, rethinking it, A through F ties our hands a little bit too. So this was a good compromise negotiated, and I can support that. The other items I can support too, and I don't have any problems with those. Hmm.
Director McKinnon?
Just a comment, just a light comment. Words from the 1700s. Adam Smith was known as the father of present-day economic theory. And what one of his suggestions and theories was that there's an invisible hand that really establishes salaries and the pricing of things. And I believe, just as Director Clift has said, we have an opportunity now by negotiation with FFRP and CCSD. We're together. We don't have a great deal of energy saying, I want more parking, I want more parking on site or whatever. As this lovely place grows and people visit it, I'm sure we will sometime in the future. And that now we have an option to look at parking on site if it be necessary. But right now it's not. And let it be.
The title of a very famous song.
That's true.
Director Chaldicott.
Yes, thank you. I was just going to address the volume level. I think that's good that we measure it at the property line. So that puts any event on.
Because of consultations with the fire chief, that their existing equipment is adequate to provide emergency access.
Yeah.
And so if they purchase new equipment in the future, I mean, they can certainly use that as well.
Yeah, okay.
Does that address your concern?
I like normal and usual emergencies.
No.
Okay. Any other comments or questions from board members? I have several requests to speak on this item. The first is from Lila Evans. Lila, it's good to see you again.
Well, it's nice to be back, although I didn't plan to be back. I planned to retire, and I was going to turn all these problems over to the young people of Cambria, Jerry McKinnon, and and I was going to retire, and here I am again. I can't believe it. But anyway, and I have no questions for you, just some comments. But I am one of the original members of the Cambrians for Fiscal Responsibility, and we did turn that over to the young people of Cambria, and they're carrying on, thank goodness, because we need to keep an eye on where our money is going. And so one of the things I just wanted to say was that we do need to keep a close look on the East-West Ranch as it's developed, because it's going to cost a lot of money, and I know I'm getting older. I'm not getting richer, and I'm sure you're not either, so we need to keep an eye on that. And the next thing I'd like to say, and is maybe a lot of people in Cambria don't know this, in September of 1996, which seems like a long time ago to me now, my daughter, who's a lawyer, my son, who's an economist, and I sat and worked on the original plan that was presented for the open space Piscolini Park. Other people were on vacation. We were at my house working, and it was then filed with the county. My son is an economist at Harvey Mudd. I recommend we do another economy study now, many years later, on what's happening. And we need to go back and review those papers, because in my file, I also have a list of many hundreds of people who donated money, who donated time to keep the East-West Ranch open. That's what it was designed for, I think, if you go back to the original papers. And I do have a lot of things on file in my house, and of course it should be on file in the county too, that state this. So we will be going back and reviewing those, and if you have any questions or anything that I can help with, I'd be glad to let you know. Let's see, there was one other thing. The California Conservancy came in and helped us with that. And if I remember right, gave us quite a bit of money. I'm going to go back with some of the people and check that and see. And I think they'd be dismayed to see what we're doing with the money they gave us. So we need to check into that. I've had some disabilities since I saw you last, so I can't work as fast as I used to.
Okay.
But anyway, we are very concerned also about the legal cost that we see coming up before the CCSD, because it seems like we have a lot of legal things keep coming up that will cost us money to take care of. And so that's all I have to say, just comments, but it's nice to see you again, and I'm leaving all the problems to you, okay?
Thank you, Lila. Appreciate it. Next is Mihaela Burton.
Directors, sorry to have so many comments, but thank you for allowing me to do so. I'm just wondering if there isn't a potential conflict in some of the language on page 53 of the findings in the packet. And I'm referring to the transportation and circulation impact 3, and the change from open meadow to future potential active recreation. I'm just wondering, I realize that the underlying zoning has never changed, that portion of the East Ranch is active recreation, whether it's called an open meadow or future active recreation. It is under county zoning active recreation. But when the mitigations were figured out and the findings to reduce the impacts on transportation and circulation and on noise, it was envisioned that there would be a maximum of four ongoing games at one time, and that by reducing the number of games played, we would then reduce the need for parking. So we have now 96 parking spaces. But if we're going to then allow unorganized games to occur on this dirt field because it won't be watered, that's going to increase parking and noise. There are a lot of people in this community tomorrow and went down and applied for a coastal development permit. He's going to be faced with an EIR?
Not necessarily an EIR, but before any kind of use like that proceeds, the law requires that an initial study be done, and then if the preparer of the initial study determines that there may be some environmental impacts associated with the use that is proposed that weren't addressed in this document, they have to be dealt with in some fashion.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next to speak is Mary Webb.
Thank you, President Sanders. I also appreciate your allowing us to comment and not restricting our time that used to happen in the past, so I do appreciate that. I do want to say for the record that any statements that have been made that say that the community has requested development in an active park on East Ranch is a misrepresentation. I've never seen any study that says that the community is requesting an active recreation sports complex on East Ranch. In March of 2005, Jan DeLeo of Slo County conducted a Parks and Rec countywide survey of what the communities wanted as far as parks and recreation go. I was at that survey, which was here at the Vets Hall. In fact, Joan Coben was there and maybe Ann Wyatt. Many people were there. What they did is they gave us these little cards, and they gave us a list of like 30 things that you might want to see parks and recreation wide in your community, and you could spend your votes, you know, however you wanted. I think everybody got 10 votes. In those cards, what ended up happening is like 80% of the people that were there put all their votes on open space, hiking, jogging trails, nature trails, birding areas, picnic, you know, areas, things like that. Nice little passive places, open space areas where everybody can sit and look at the birds. All other categories, which included all the active recreation ones, soccer fields, sport fields, tennis courts, ball fields, had very few votes. I mean, like a couple of cards were on those. So not satisfied with this result, the Cambria Parks and Rec group reinvented the same survey and sent it out to all Cambria residents in the CCSD bills. So they had all these choices again. Do you want hiking trails, open space, nature trails, park, you know, soccer, you know, whatever. Those surveys came back. I think it was a really good response. Something like 25% of the residents responded to that survey and confirmed the exact same thing, even though there were way more people that turned their surveys back in, that about 80% of the community wanted to see passive recreation, open space, hiking, nature trails, picnic areas, birding areas, you know, things like that. Soccer fields, sport fields, things like that were on the very bottom of the list. What came in second was lap pool, and third, I think, was the dog park. And they were not a close second. They were down the list. The open space was the top, okay? That they didn't necessarily like the way that survey came out either, so they actually rewrote it, and we did it again. So three surveys have been done and came out with the same results. So the dog park moved up the list because the lap pool was basically, you know, not going to happen. Obviously, we don't have water here for a lap pool, but there was a committee formed to do the lap pool. And I think they came up with the same answer. It's not going to happen here. So the dog park moved up the list, and you guys ended up doing a dog park, which I thought was really kind of a cute idea. The fact it was going to be the future offices for the CCSD didn't appeal to me, and hopefully that whole idea has been dropped by now, but I guess we'll attend to that later. Sports fields were the very last on the list, and of all the activities, there were something like 20 activities, sports fields were way at the very bottom. I think they were the bottom. So please don't repeat the statements that this park is something that the community is demanding, because it's not true. And this is another perfect example of why these ill-considered schemes end up costing us so much money and take so much time, because the majority of Cambrians don't want the sports park at all. So I'm sure we will end up years down the road, probably in front of the Coastal Commission, arguing all these same things, which is going to cost us a whole lot more money. Mr. Niffen did present a list of 60 names in support of the park last meeting in October. I'm sure that's probably pretty accurate. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next to speak is Ann Winburn.
Thank you, President Sanders.
You're welcome.
For your
opportunity
to speak. I do not oppose a community park. I oppose a community park design with activities that cause unavoidable and significant adverse impacts to water supply, traffic, and noise. I agree with the Coastal Conservancy that the coast belongs to all Californians, and we believe that it is not only possible but necessary to provide for a variety of recreational experiences for residents and visitors alike. As Mary said, recreation, 49% want nature trails, 27% want lap pools, 24% want dog park, 23% want jogging trail and track, 22% want picnic areas, 21% want community garden, 19% want tennis courts, 19% want after-school programs, 18% want playgrounds, 17% of our community want outdoor fitness stations, 17% want arts and crafts, 16% want outdoor stage, 13% want soccer fields, 12% want softball baseball fields, 11% want sand volleyball, 8% want basketball, 7% want day camp. This is what the community says it wants more of. But the objectives of the Community Park Master Plan, as determined by the CCSD, are as follows. Provide public, athletic, mixed-use field space for youth and adult sports. Lessen the current deficiency of active recreational opportunities in the community of Cambria consistent with the County General Plan. To Mary's point, we would like a little more information than just the words here written. There's no data, there's no supporting background to support this current deficiency of active recreation opportunities. I don't know if anybody's looked at where we live, but the opportunities for active recreation in Cambria are huge. Respond to community requests for additional active recreation opportunities and public use areas, including a minimum of 4 multi-use sports fields. Now, I want to know how that objective became an objective for the development of this park in view of the survey results. I don't understand how that happened. There's never been any data to back up the claims of community requests. So it sounds like this park is well designed to meet the needs of the county, but not Cambria. Too bad this was called a community park for Cambrians, because it does not meet the needs nor the expressed desires of Cambrians and what they are willing to pay for and live with. People outside of this community who want to create their own recreational multiplex have hijacked your Fiscalina Ranch Preserve. And it will give someone a director of parks recreation job at $200,000 a year. And, of course, a recreation director will need a staff of at least 2 to 3 people, so that's probably another $200,000 more a year. And we will certainly need a facilities manager or someone to schedule the use of all the sports multiplex fields. They'll need to be paid. New job for someone else, too. I'm pleased that consideration of parking annoyances to the residences of the West Fiscalina Ranch have been listened to. And I'm also impressed that there's some deference to the people near the West trails, that they will be solicited for their input. I would like to suggest and I would like to request that all the residents surrounding the Fiscalini East Ranch be solicited for their input as well, just like the West Ranch people and the parking issue, regarding noise, regarding the disturbance of what is a pristine, peaceful nature preserve. The wildlife that everybody loves on the West Ranch migrates and lives on the East Ranch. The foxes, the coyote, the deer, the great horned owls, the birds and other critters take shelter and refuge up in the canyons of the East Ranch and the wetland brush along the creek. I live there. I see this every day. They sleep on the East Ranch. It is quiet.
Ann, can you wrap it up, please?
Certainly. I would just also like to say that I concur with Director Cliff's statement at your last meeting where you discussed this topic that there are no real mitigations here. You can say that, and this is a mitigation stated in your EIR, that amplified sound shall be prohibited at the community park, and it'll be limited to 70 decibels at the lat line. If noise violations occur, complaints may be submitted to the CCSD. I want to know how the CCSD is going to enforce their mitigations. I see no plans in place, and I look forward to that when the project EIR comes up. Thank you.
Thank you. Next to speak is Jerry McKinnon.
Jerry McKinnon again. That says estimated capital outlay. At the bottom of page 48 and the bottom of page 49, capital outlay is defined as capital outlay or capital improvement program. Now, I understand when we tackle a capital improvement or a capital outlay program in water and wastewater, the funds come from the rates. I'm also under the impression that when we look at capital improvement on such a thing as the ranch preserve, the funds come from our property taxes. When I look at the column on the West Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, I see that of the 20, there are 9 that require money from the CCSD, and there are 4 on the East Ranch that require money from the CCSD. The others are taken care of by grants and no improvements and so forth, as whatever the notes indicate. Now, are we spreading an additional financial burden on our property tax receipts? Can we really afford this elephant? Because every time we appropriate money from our property taxes, we're taking it away from some other enterprise in the CCSD operation. That's my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Next to speak is Elizabeth Bentenhausen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to second what Jerry McKinnon has just raised. I think it would help on Table 1 and 2 if there were an amplification of the tentativeness of the estimated capital outlay and the projects on the pages. One gets the impression looking at them that they are proposed projects, whereas they have not, many of them have never been specifically proposed in any fashion. It's misleading to the people who just read this, including myself, because I would assume, reading Table 2, that the project that takes 3 to 5 years means 3 to 5 years from now. I know that's not the case. It's 3 to 5 years from when the project is approved that there would be a capital outlay plan. But that's very ambiguous on these two tables. So I would urge you to do some more specific footnoting of those two. I have many comments that I'm not going to raise. I raised some last time, but I just want to do the comma issue. On the errata sheet revised November 16, 2009, in the oral presentation of it today, on page 1, TC, what is that called, slash whatever, MM4, the correct wording of the first line was given in the oral, and it should say upon application for the first land use or construction permits from the county.
Correct.
And leaving it as currently worded could be very intriguing as people try many new devices to get this underway. I would finally say then that in your resolution, however you propose it as board members, I would urge you then to refer to the errata sheet of November 16th and not the one it says in your current resolutions, November 10th. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next to speak is Bob Detweiler.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
On behalf of the board of the Friends of the Fiscal Indian Ranch, I've been asked to speak on our behalf as a whole. Let me remind you that the Friends of the Fiscal Indian Ranch Preserve is a not-for-profit volunteer organization which has only one duty, and that is to protect and, in support of the CCSD, enhance the Fiscal Indian Ranch. It's a terrific asset in our community, and like you, we're proud to volunteer to help protect it and look out for its future. In our capacity as holder of the conservation easement on the ranch, we have the responsibility to help preserve the natural resource values of the ranch and help to accommodate public access for folks who want to use the ranch. So, with that responsibility, we've been really interested in the EIR, and we've paid close attention to it through the whole process. Let me say that we have been extremely pleased with the process. The members of the staff and the leadership of the CCSD have been terrific. Good communications, good willingness to compromise. And so my report to you is very succinct. The Friends of the Fiscal Indian Ranch Preserve are quite comfortable with the process that led to the EIR.
Thank you, Dr. Detweiler. Appreciate the comments. The next and final request to speak is from Amanda Rice. Helps if I put my glasses on when I read something. Sorry about that. I've been swatting flies and doing other things. We'll get to that for a public comment. Right. Okay. I have no more requests to speak, so the board will review what's been said, and we'll get to a motion here eventually. We have a number of tasks, and what I propose to do is just divide them into the order in which they're listed on the agenda. And to do that, I need my agenda. And it seems to have gotten up and walked away. Thank you very much, Director Clift. Sorry for the confusion here. The first order of business here is to consider certification of the Fiscal Indian Ranch Preserve Master Environmental Impact Report. We have an exhibit here entitled Exhibit A, which is an errata sheet, which makes a number of amendments to the EIR text. As was pointed out by Ms. Bentenhausen, under Item 2, the parking mitigation measure TCMM-4 that is proposed has an error in the first line. The word of should be or. I'm not aware of any other errors. Board members, what is your pleasure?
I would like to move the adoption of Resolution 50-2009. Approving certification of the Fiscal Indian Ranch Preserve Master Environment Impact Report with changes as per attached errata sheet dated November 16th, as amended with the red all being two.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to certify the Fiscal Indian Ranch Master Environmental Impact Report as amended by the errata sheet dated November 16th, 2009. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. The second item is to consider adoption of Resolution 54-2009, which approves the revised community park plan. Board members? That's the big one. Principally, this is the revision that incorporates the balance of the east portion of the ranch and incorporates it into the community park, subject to no irrigation being provided.
And we've got to do that one because I just looked on page 43 and they're referring to Exhibit A. Is that the one? This should be the
It's the exhibit that was presented to us by our EIR consultant. And it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's two different.
There's two different exhibit A's.
Okay.
And this is the revised community park plan dated November 10th, which incorporates that change in the name of that.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
That's correct. Motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve 54-209 with the revisions that. Including the...
And the exhibits as discussed.
Right.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 54-2009, approving the revised community park plan with the exhibits as discussed. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. The last item to consider under Item 9A is an authorization for the general manager to sign... and file the, next to last, is to sign and file the notice of determination, which is the document that gets filed with the county that indicates that the board has certified the environmental impact report. It's a ministerial function.
So moved.
It's been moved. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to authorize the general manager to file the required notice of determination and to file it with the county. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. And finally, we have a resolution 56-2009, which approves a contract CCSD regular board meeting schedule.
Okay. Yeah.
Madam General Manager?
Excuse me. I was helping Director D'Amico. It's okay. The very last item. Okay, so this is the time of the year in order to prepare for 2010 for you to consider your regular board meeting schedule. You'll notice the attached, and I appreciate the assistance of Kathy Choate, our district clerk, to go through, and most of the meetings comply or comport with the third Thursday of the month as our standard meeting date, except for four. That being starting in January 28th, it would normally be. Because of the annual Chamber Art and Wine Festival, we're backing it up a week. So we propose January 21st. In August, don't know this, but there's likely to be a conflict with the Pine Dorado like there was this year. So we're advising or suggesting August 19th, which is the third Thursday. And then again in the November, December to accommodate the Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays in 2010, we're suggesting November 15th, which is the third Monday, and December 13th, which is the second Monday. And all the other months have the third Thursday.
Any questions or comments, board members?
Thank you. Fourth Thursday. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions or comments, board members? Director Clift.
I don't have a conflict in voting on this, do I, as chairman of Pine Dorado? Okay.
It's okay. We know the hell that you would have to pay if you... did something that would conflict with Pine Dorado, so we'll forgive you, Merle. All right. Is there a motion to approve the schedule?
I so move.
Second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the 2010 CCSD regular board meeting schedule as presented. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. The schedule is adopted.
That brings us to the final public comment period for this meeting. I have one, two, three requests to speak. The first is from Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders. I could see why you would call me on for the last item. I do come up and speak awfully frequently.
My fault. I didn't read it.
First thing is I'd like to give you an update on the tree removal that was done by PG&E. My personal situation was they took down two trees and took up more than half my yard. My dogs are running around on tree stump in my yard. Mm-hmm. And they are coming to take care of cleaning up that, and they are taking care of the lot that is near Burton and Ardith. They should be doing that in the next week or so. And they also were going to do something about the Fern Canyon lots where they had just kind of dumped some trunks, and it was brought up at the Forest Committee that maybe November when the rainy season starts isn't the best time to do that, and so they're looking at doing that. The other thing that happened at the Forest Committee meeting was the Art Trinidad from Code Enforcement at the county said that they're what they're going to do is basically do a back-end permit for PG&E. They took out 76 trees, and so they can put conditions on that permit that then the county Code Enforcement can follow up on taking care of.
Good.
So my trees are going also. Dogs are very happy about it. And I'd just also like to remind people that next year is the census. It's the 10-year census, and it's important that we count everybody because they're estimating a 1% undercount for the county will cost us about $5 million. So it's important to get everybody counted. And the timeline kind of looks like this. In mid-December, there's going to be kind of a pre-meeting of people that are interested in being involved in spreading the word about the census and getting good information out there. In January, PG&E is holding a launch party with the county. SLOCOG is the county liaison with the U.S. Census Bureau, and PG&E is throwing up some kind of start kickoff meeting, and that's in January. In March, surveys will go out to all the households that were listed this last spring. April 1st. Yes, April 1st is Census Day. When you get your survey, it's a short survey. You just need to fill it out and send it back. And then in May through about August, they'll have people that'll go out, and any households that don't return the survey, they'll go and see why there was no survey returned. There's a couple of differences that'll happen this year's census. Before, they've never sent out a second one if they don't get a survey back. This year they're going to send out a second one if they don't get one back. And in December...
In your last meeting, the last CCSD meeting, President Sanders and Connie Davidson both stated that the PROS committee meetings minutes are posted on the CCSD website and have been for some time, and that is patently not true. Still today, I checked, regarding agendas and minutes under PROS, it says that agendas and minutes may be obtained by contacting Connie Davidson, and then it lists her phone number. I did request some meeting minutes from PROS meetings of the CCSD in September, and I contacted Connie, and Connie told me that she was directed by staff that it required I do a public records request. So I have some concerns about the misrepresentation of open and transparent meetings taking place on behalf of the community, and especially a statement being made that indeed minutes are available on the website and have been for some time, when that in fact is not true, and I had to pay money to get the minutes. So I'd like to ask the board if you would consider asking staff to get all of the PROS meeting minutes posted on the CCSD website. I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, and if I misspoke, I apologize.
Well, it's not misspeaking. It's not true. And Connie even said, yes, they're posted, and she's the poster. So they're not posted.
The next to speak is Elizabeth Bentenhausen.
Were I ever to be a public servant in an elected or appointed position or as a consultant, which I have no intention whatsoever of doing, but were I ever to be such, I would want to be the kind of public servant that Connie Davidson has been in my experience. Every single time I have asked this woman for information, regardless of what this latest incident is, I never requested that. Every single time. She has never delayed. She has never said no. She has responded with the kind of concern for public interest that I simply must admire. So for her consulting with CCSD and her service to me as a member of the public, I want to give her the heartiest expression of gratitude that I can give. Thank you, Connie Davidson.
Thank you, Ms. Bentenhausen. That was very nice of you to do that. I have no more requests to speak. Oh, yes, Jerry McKinnon.
Record.
And Alan does too. So.
Good. You did it once, but you can't do it
twice. No. You're right, Jerry.
Okay. A statement, Jerry McKinnon again, a statement of fact. There are a lot of people out there who watch television but are not privy to the financial side of it. I would like to bring to their attention that we wrote a check to Pacific Gas and Electric for street lights covering from August 28th through October 5th for $1,117.20. That's a part of the expenses that we have undertaken that, okay, that's an expense. All right. Now, the question that I have relates back to our relationship with the California Department of Forestry, should we enter into that. Government, including the CCSD, are bureaucracies. Now, we have one bureaucracy in place. The CDF would be another bureaucracy. Is there a third or fourth or fifth bureaucracy that controls the operation of the California Department of Forestry that would have a trickle-down effect and affect the operation and the protection of Cambria or the expenses that we would undertake if we entered into an agreement with the CDF? I'm curious how far out this goes. Thank you.
We'll find out.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have no more requests to speak. Is there anybody else in the audience who wants to address the board on a matter that's not on the agenda? If not, we'll close the second public hearing or public comment period, and we have a couple of issues that two board members want to bring up. Director D'Amico?
Yes, actually, I'm acting for the chief. He didn't want to leave. He had to leave. But the First Baptist Church of Cambria has a school, and fourth and fifth graders, they work with them to talk about public service for the communities. And as
months ago, I happened to attend the NCAC meeting, and someone violently stood up and said, I can't stand these trash cans here all throughout the community. And we talked with general manager, and of course it came from Mission and Disposal. They gave us through grants all these beautiful trash cans, and they are terrible. They're an embarrassment. I think if we're in the top 20 most beautiful communities in the country, and then you see some of these containers, we have to do something about it. If we're a city, we take care of it. Ben Barr and his one-and-a-half staff can't do it. We recognize that he does extra work during the summer trying to take care of the stuff that disposal emission doesn't take care of. But we have to make a decision. Either the shop owners take care of it, and there's a benefit, I think, for the shop owners. They could publicize it by a little plaque or something, but they're filthy. They're scratched at the surface. They're very, very nice. Stone or stone surface, and then some smooth surfaces that are all dinged up and smoke, you know, putting out their cigarettes on the top of them and everything else. And they stink. Something has to be done. Either we take them away or the shop owners step up to the plate. The alternate, though, unfortunately, is people will probably throw their trash in the ground. So it's not, neither one of those are totally viable, but certainly there has to be the shop owners as the first position of taking care of the maintenance of those trash cans. And I think the general manager, I don't know what the comment, you know, it's not agendized an action from the board, but certainly we have to do something about it, because by default it keeps coming back to us. And the last NCAC meeting I attended last month came up again. And then, of course, you've seen the article in the Cambrian. And it's kind of a sad case when these ladies, you see them out there scrubbing the trash cans.
God bless them. Let me suggest maybe there are two organizations that have roles to play here. One is Mission Disposal, and the other is the Chamber. And perhaps as between the two, we can get something going in a positive direction. Ben Boer has done some yeoman's work cleaning up some of the receptacles. He's even steam cleaned the sidewalk in a couple of places. But as you point out, he just doesn't have the time, the personnel, the staff, et cetera. Perhaps the general manager can, as a part of her general manager's report in December, let us know what Mission has to say and what the Chamber has to say about it, and see if we can get a resolution going.
I already know what Mission
won't do anything.
Mission won't.
They pick up
trash for free.
Yeah.
So that's what they do.
The Chamber,
I
guess.
I haven't approached the Chamber. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Terrific. Anything else, board members?
Wasn't there a problem, the fact that we can't allow the water to go down into the drains?
That's correct.
So,
yeah.
So in other words, the ladies that were doing it may have been in violation of the Clean Water Act.
That's one of the... Amanda.
I'd just like to mention this is on our agenda for the NCAC this week, Wednesday evening at 6:30 we meet, and this is on our agenda because we want to find a solution for this also.
Maybe we can dovetail our efforts.
Yeah,
and
that would be
get something
that would be
positive.
I would welcome that. Thank you.
Great.
Good.
Thank you. Any other, Jerry?
May I make a suggestion for consideration in cleaning the garbage cans? There are individuals who are assigned to do public service in the community because of some legal infraction. Could they be used to clean the streets? Thank you.
Perhaps so. Thank you. Board members, any other business? If not, we're adjourned to closed session, which is in the dining hall here in the Vets Hall.